Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cicerino back here with another one of our Survivor post-season interviews. And today we're going to be gabbing with Gabby Pascuzzi. But before we get to that, I want to welcome in the first lady of podcasting, Nicole Cicerino. Nicole, how are you?
I am good.
Nicole, are you excited to hear from Gabby on the podcast today?
I am, yes.
Okay, I'll be talking with her in just a bit. We'll get to all of that, of course. This is the third of our Survivor postseason interviews that we did. We had Christian Hubicki here right after the season. Had a great chat with Nick Wilson to start off the new year. And this is the third of these that we're going to talk to Gabby today, Nicole.
You busy little beaver, aren't you?
Look, this is a fun cast, and maybe we'll do a couple more of these after, but looking forward to getting into everything with Gabby here today. Before we get to Gabby on the podcast, we're going to talk to Gabby uninterrupted. I want to take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast, and Nicole, those are our friends over at Tommy John.
Yes, and I definitely to thank them.
Yes, okay. Tommy John, welcome to Rob as a Podcast. By now, everybody's got the New Year's resolutions in the book, but the one thing that you should be focused on in 2019, you're going to like this, Nicole, is being more comfortable. And for Tommy John, they are the revolutionary company that's redefining comfort for men and women because they have the most comfortable men and women's underwear on the planet, keeping men neat and nestled and women panty line free. Now, I've gotten a chance to try out some Tommy John underwear.
Yes, and you certainly were neat and nestled.
Neat and nestled. Okay. Nicole said thumbs up.
I don't know if you've noticed, but I went through your underwear drawer.
What?
And I threw out those old boxer shorts that you used to lounge around in.
Wait, they didn't send me that many pairs, Nicole.
Well, then you better get shopping. What's the coupon code?
We've got a great offer right now. 20% off your first order at TommyJohn.com/Rob. That's TommyJohn.com/Rob. Nicole, you're going to love this because Tommy John is the only underwear that has the no wedgie guarantee. Now,
how am I going to give you wedgies now?
Sorry. They've got the comfortable stay put waistband and a range of fabrics that are luxuriously soft, feather light, moisture wicking, breathable, and designed to move with you, not against you. That means there's no bunching and no riding up. And plus, Tommy John has a life changing women's line, luxurious hibernation approved loungewear for men and women. And their latest innovation, the first ever stay tucked dress shirt for men.
Ooh la la.
So make your New Year's resolution no more wedgies, because not only does Tommy John have the no wedgie guarantee, they also have the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee, which means if you don't love your first pair, you're going to get a full refund, Nicole.
Don't you wish you had this in high school?
Nice. Don't get too hung up on the no wedgies, Nicole.
Sorry, you know how I fixate.
All right, hurry to TommyJohn.com/Rob right now for 20% of your first order. That's at TommyJohn, TommyJohn.com/Rob for 20% off only at TommyJohn.com. TommyJohn.com.
Ladies, do yourself a favor.
Nicole, thank you so much.
get your man these undies.
Nicole, thank you so much. Always a pleasure to have you here with us to share share your insight.
Keeps it tight.
All right. Thank you, Nicole. All right, everybody. I'm very excited to bring in our guest today to talk about everything that she went through during Survivor, David versus Goliath. Please welcome to the podcast, Gabby Pascuzzi. Gabby, how are you?
Hello. I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing very good, Gabby. Gabby, now that I get to say your name like that, are you any part Italian?
Yes, I am. My dad is Italian American, so you pronounced my name correctly. Good job.
That you have a very Italian name.
Very, yeah. The double Z. It should be actually Pascuzzi, like pizza, but we just Americanize it.
All right. Well, that I will try. I will try. Do you want to have the more Italian pronunciation? Because I can do that.
No, that's okay. I trust you with it, but it's unnecessary. Nobody in my family pronounces it that way, so it'd be a little extreme.
All right. Gabby, very nice to have you here to talk about everything from Survivor David versus Goliath. What have you been up to after the season? Now, I assume because you were on reality TV, you have quit your job and are now a full-time Instagram model.
Yes, yes. That was my plan all along. No, yeah, I'm working the same job. I'm still a technical writer. And my job was nice enough to let me go do Survivor and come back. And I recently moved to Northern Virginia. So I'm like right outside DC. And so that's the perfect time to move to a new city, is in the middle of the airing of yourself on reality TV. So that's what I decided to do.
Yeah, because you were really all over the country. I had so many of the listeners say that I saw Gabby here. I saw Gabby in Jacksonville, Washington, D.C. Kellen said she saw you in Denver. So, I mean, you were like on tour.
Oh, my gosh. No. So I'm lucky enough that I work remotely. So really, a lot of times I can get away with being somewhere for a weekend or for a Wednesday night, as long as I am online during the day doing my job. So it's nice that I've been able to visit a lot of friends. And during my move, I moved from Denver, and that's where I met Kellen, and moved to DC. And on the way, I kind of stopped at some other cities. So it's been an exciting few months, but I'm ready sort of for life to go back to normal, actually.
What was the reaction from your coworkers in terms of watching a person that they work with go and play on Survivor?
They were all just really excited that the world found out what a technical writer does.
Oh,
I think two times in the season, I got to say my job and say my profession and explain what we do. So I write documentation for software. So how I explain that to people is like, when you don't know how to use a piece of software and you're stuck doing something and you're like, how do I do this? And you click the little button that says help, and it brings you to the page that's like steps on how to do something, or a description of the product and why you would use it and what you would use this feature for. That's what I write. So it's so funny because no one ever knows what a technical writer is. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot of technical writers actually say, thanks for telling the world what we do, because we feel so underappreciated. So that they were actually really excited for that.
How did you get into that?
I was a writing major in college. The name of my major was professional writing, which I always laughed about because I'm like, what would be the opposite of that? Like unprofessional writing? But yeah, I was a linguistics and professional writing major. And I went to a very engineering and technical and computer science-y school. I went to Carnegie Mellon, and so I sort of just fell into it. But yeah, so that's been a surprisingly interesting part of going on Survivor, is people are like, oh, we now know what you actually do for work.
And what was your background with Survivor? Had you been a longtime fan, or were you more of a recent convert?
I call myself a born again fan. So I was a day one fan, where I was 7 years old when the first season came out. Sorry to anybody who knew that. Old, but I am 25. So I was 7 years old at the time and watched it with my family. Like, it was always a family event. I was obsessed. The story I remember telling them during casting this story, that when I was 10 years old and Pearl Islands was on, I would always watch with my family. And it was I fell asleep one night before the end of the episode, and, woke up the next morning. My mom woke me up for school, and the first thing I said was like, no, who went home? Because I had missed the episode. And she knew that he was my favorite player. Mm-hmm. Because of course, I was a 10-year-old. My mom says, Rupert went home. And I am crying, and I'm like getting mad at her for letting me fall asleep. So needless to say, like, I was that dorky child that was a fan of Survivor. And then I kind of like stopped watching. I don't even know why. I think around season like 16, I stopped watching, which is sad because that was actually a good season.
But you had a good run.
I did. And yeah, then I didn't come back to it until season 31, Second Chances. And I had just moved to Denver, and I like caught it on TV, and it just triggered this weird nostalgic thing in me where I was like, oh my gosh, this reminds me of my childhood. This is so comforting. And having moved to a new place, it was like nice to go back to something comforting.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started rewatching, and then Second Chances was such a crazy season to start rewatching because first of all, I recognized like half of the players and I was like, oh my gosh, I remember that person from when I was watching on their old season. And then also because the strategy was so insane that I was like, is this what Survivor is now?
Mm-hmm.
So I became reobsessed, watched all the seasons that I missed, found the recaps, found the podcasts, like totally started geeking out about it and fell in love with it and decided that why should I just stay watching it when I could apply and be on Survivor?
So when you decide that you're going to apply, is that recently or had you been in the mix for a while?
So this time getting on was my second time applying. And my first time applying, I did at least kind of get in the mix of it where I had gotten a call back and actually I had gotten asked to make like a second video and I had done the doctor's visits and a bunch of the stuff, but I didn't end up getting on. So by the second time I applied, I was like, I think I know more how to present myself and the story that I need to tell. I mean, I was totally just myself, but I think you just gain a little bit of confidence when you're like, oh my gosh, I could actually get on.
And then what was your reaction when you finally were told that you were going to be a part of an actual season of the show?
I was elated, of course. I think my reaction when I got the call was just expletives that I will not repeat. Mm-hmm. But I was so happy. I mean, I being a fan and then getting the chance to play, it's everything you could imagine, you know.
What's been the biggest thing that since the show has aired people want to talk to you about?
Probably two things. I get a lot of messages from people who say that my vulnerability has been something that they've been able to relate to and that they appreciate being someone that was just so open with their emotions on TV. And that was something I consciously went out there knowing that that would happen. I know that I'm not the kind of person that my emotions come out. They just come out. I know, like it's everyone knows that I cry. Everyone knows that I am an emotional person, and I've always viewed it as a strength. Or I shouldn't say always, but in recent years, I have learned that I'm just going to own it. This is part of me. And so to hear that reaction from people, that's been really amazing. And then the other half is actually, I think a lot of women have reached out to me and said that they have just appreciated the way that not only me, but many women on our season conducted ourselves. And I feel like our season had a lot of sort of meta conversation about gender. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I brought it up at Final Tribal Council. And after that, I got a lot of messages where people were like, thanks for saying something about that, that's something that they had been thinking for a while. And so to me, that was awesome because, I mean, if I can even reach one person with these things that personally they're important to me, then that's awesome. And to me, the one person that it might reach is worth, you know, maybe the nastier messages that I get from people who are like not so happy about it.
Yeah, I want to go back to the vulnerability thing because you said that you had a lot of messages from people. And that was one of the things I wanted to ask you about. And is that in some ways a burden in that you were so vulnerable on the show that you end up then a lot of people end up coming to you and they want to then share their stories with you?
You know, that's actually, I feel like happened to me my whole life. And that was something,
I don't mean to use the word burden as in it, like an inconvenience, but in that, then, because that's a lot of then, you know, emotional stuff to take on, because I think then a lot of people want to open up to you and, you know, share their emotional stories.
Yeah. And I know exactly what you mean. It's not that it's a burden per se, but I think by being such an open person myself, it does tend to make people feel like they can open up to me too. And I love that. And I think that it is one of my strengths, and something that I like about myself is that I usually am the friend that people come to for advice. And I usually am, ironically, the shoulder that other people cry on. And that was something that I saw as a strength going into Survivor, where I knew that the more open that I am, the more open other people are going to be with me. And I mean, I can talk about it a little more. I think it helped and hindered me in some ways. But yeah, I mean, outside of the show, I think, you know, people that were my friends that already knew that about me, they were like, wow, I can't believe you were just like that out there as well. Like, we already knew this about you, but you're like that out there too. And I do have people that have watched the show that DM me things that they're going through. And I try to reply to a lot of people, but oh my gosh, social media is so crazy nowadays too. But I think if I could get one message out there, it would just be that, you know, people don't have to bottle things up that they're feeling. And people should feel free to talk to whoever, talk to a friend, talk to whoever works for you, a parent, a teacher, or a professional, like go to a therapist. I am totally an advocate for that kind of thing too. So I don't know. I think that the world would be such an amazing place if everyone were in tune with their emotions and had the strength to be vulnerable, because so much is lost in communication. I feel like when we're trying to hide things and we're trying to bottle things up, we don't understand where people are coming from. But if we're able to really open up to people, then I think you connect on a really deep level.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why I hear from a lot of the fans that they found you to be a very relatable person on the show, because I think that you were very expressive about the types of things that you were feeling out there and the stuff that you were going through. And I think that's definitely a experience that a lot of people can share with what you were going through.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that people can relate. And yeah, I mean, I went out there and I was truly myself. I do think that you can only play like yourself in Survivor. So like, trust me, people, do you think I wanted to, like, you know, did I want to be crying during the Elizabeth tribal? Like, probably not. But I just know, like, I just sometimes I can't help it. Sometimes I really just can't help it. So, I mean, I could totally get into like whether it was strategic or genuine. And I think it's a combination of both. And I talked to Josh in the article that he wrote for The Hollywood Reporter about this kind of thing. And I'm sure that we'll cover it over the course of this, you know, when we're talking about the different things that happen in the game. But yeah, I mean, I really think you can only play like yourself. And that's just part of me.
Okay, well, let's talk about your time on the island. And you start the game as part of the David tribe. Did that like immediately resonate with you being a David?
Yes. Oh my gosh. I think there's the funniest reaction shot of me in the episode when Jeff says the theme, and I have like the most excitable face, because I actually, as soon as we were on those boats and split and I started to surmise that, oh, I think these are our tribes, I knew what the theme was. I mean, I didn't know it was called David versus Goliath, but I was like, this is weird. Like something is up here. And as soon as he said David versus Goliath, I was like, I am on the David mat. Yes, I totally know. So something that's funny about that is, so when we're on those boats and we're, you know, they're taking that, we have the dramatic shots of us looking out on the ocean, and it's like the David boat and the Goliath boat. So before we got on those boats, we were sort of being transported off of the pregame location to those boats. And we were all kind of mixed up before then. And so then you have somebody telling us, okay, you go on this boat, you go on that boat. And like, I'm starting to figure out like, oh, I think these are the boats. I think this might be our tribes. And so I'm looking at the other boat that I'm not on, and you've got like Allison and Kara and Dan and John and like these tall, strong people. And then the last couple people to be picked to like, okay, you go on that boat, you go on that boat, were like Alec and Christian. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, well, obviously Alec's coming on my boat because they have to even out the strength here. And like, there's no way they're going to put that nerdy guy
right.
with because I'm like the nerdy girl and we're like exactly the same person. And so like one of the producers like points and they're like, okay, you go on that boat, on the Goliath boat. And I thought they pointed at Christian and I'm like, yep, that makes sense. And then Alec jumps over and I'm like, oh no, no. Oh no, wait, I'm sorry. What is happening here?
Yeah.
There's like three strong guys on that boat. And then I'm looking at my boat and I'm like, what is happening? This is like the biggest group of people I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And of course you're like, you know, we're driving around in the boats. We're having these like dramatic wind in the hair shots taken of us. And I'm like, oh my gosh, the theme is underdogs versus top dogs. I could just tell from the way we were separated. So as soon as he said David versus Goliath, I thought it totally made sense. And this is one thing that I think is a little hard to get from watching it on TV, because I saw a lot of people like fans online saying, well, why is so-and-so a Goliath? And why is so... I actually, as soon as the theme was announced and as soon as I saw the people on the mats, it made complete sense to me. Just from the pregame Ponderosa impressions even. And to me, it was like, it was about an aura that the people gave off, like a vibe that the Goliaths versus the Davids gave off. And you could just tell the Goliaths were like cool and always got what they wanted. And like, I know people were like, why is Alec a Goliath? He's a bartender. Alec is just freaking cool. Okay. Like that's the reason. So that was a very long answer to what you asked, which is like, what did I think about the theme? And I thought the theme was actually kind of awesome. Thank God that I was on like the good guys' side, which was something actually the Goliaths were very vocal about. I mean, you saw part of it in the premiere where you have Allison saying, well, I don't know. I remember Mike said something about he's a screenwriter. So he's all about storytelling. And I remember Mike said, well, we're the villains. We're the villains. Who's going to be rooting for us? And like was very funny about it. But I mean, I felt great being on the Davids, except for the fact that I was like, are we ever going to win a challenge?
It's so funny the way that you talk about this, because I had never thought about that from the perspective of the people that are at Ponderosa. Because of course, when you're sitting there, that you're not divided by your tribe, you're sitting there in a room with everybody, and to look at it and then get loaded in based on these people that you're with, you know, there's no way that you conceive that that's how they're going to break up the tribes.
Right. It was truly surreal. Like I was like, for a second, I worried that it was going to be like a horrible season. Cause I was like, well, our team's just going to be demolished. Mm-hmm. You're so much physically weaker. And to be honest, that was kind of the sentiment up until up until we won, which was the third immunity challenge, which when you're watching at home, you're like, okay, well, they only lost two challenges. When you're out there in real life, you're like, oh my God, it's been 9 days since we have won a challenge. Like you can tell that you're the inferior team challenge wise. So in a way it was scary where I was like, please don't let this be a bust of a season where we are just going to get demolished and it's going to be a pagonging and I'm on this like weakling tribe. And oh my gosh, to me, it's amazing how the season turned out considering the theme. And it's like, I mean, first of all, going out there as a fan, I was like, oh, I'm so happy to find out that everything is real. Like, no, you know, nothing's fake. But it's like, could you have written the season any better than it turned out? It's really incredible.
Did you think about that a lot when you were out there? Is this a good season? Is this a bad season?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. I did. But I get very meta, which I think was kind of my downfall in certain areas. Was I was like, well, how does this look from the outside? And how, not like the viewers, but like I was always very conscious of like the stories being told, the narrative. And it was something that we talked about. I mean, the castmates, I remember, you know, after certain huge votes, we would be like, was that crazy? Was that a crazy vote?
Mm-hmm.
And even when we were leaving the game, a bunch of us were like, okay, that was a good season, right? Like, of course, I'm sure everyone thinks their season is amazing. We're like, okay, are we biased or was that a good season? So for me, that was so fun to have the fan reaction be that a lot of people have said that it was an amazing season. And that just makes me so happy because we had so much fun playing. At least I did. I mean, I think a lot of my castmates, we had so much fun playing that it's so fun to see that reflected in like what people consider a quote unquote good season.
Would that ever affect a move that you were thinking about of, you know, is this a good season? Is this a bad season? Is this going to be good for how the game is going to be played?
Well, so I don't think I ever thought about it from like the audience perspective, because no offense, audience, but like we're out there playing for $1 million. I think now I have a lot more empathy for like why sort of boring seasons happen, because sometimes I think the best Survivor might be boring gameplay where it's like,
absolutely,
you know, it's like it makes sense. Stick with the majority. Oh, my God, you have the numbers. So for me, it was so much easier in a way to play from the bottom, to be an underdog. Not only in the Davids, but I felt like in my position from the Davids, because I was like, I felt like it gave me permission to play for broke, where it was like, well, nobody's going to be mad at me for trying when, like, you know, what do I have right now? Like a 5% chance of winning. I might as well go for like a little bit of an increase of winning. Mm-hmm. So I honestly think it's easier to play from the bottom. But so to answer your question, I don't think I ever played thinking like, this is going to look awesome on TV. This is a big move, like hashtag big moves with a Z. But it was more like I did see things in a meta way where I was like, well, if I made it to Final Tribal, what would my story be? And how could I convince people that I wasn't just floating along? And how could I mean, I think I'm a pretty self-aware person. Sometimes to the extent that I feel like it might hurt me a little bit, where it's like, I am so worried about my perception, or I'm hyper aware of how people are perceiving me, that I think like the only time it really hurt me was when I went home, which is that I think I tried to overcompensate and I was like, oh, you know, I'm being perceived as not making any moves. So now I need to make a big move again, not for the sake of the audience watching at home, but for the sake of like, being able to tell a story at Tribal, or being able to like break free of this perception. But it might have been a little bit in retrospect. I think maybe I overcompensated. Like maybe I'm like too self-aware to the point of not giving myself enough credit.
It's been, you know, well established that you and Christian really, you know, hit it off almost instantly. Is there anybody else that you felt like that you had a particularly close bond with in the early days of the game?
In the early days of the game, well, what's funny, of course, watching the seasons back, I'm like, oh, because I thought I had a good relationship with Nick. Mm-hmm. And then I see episode 3 where he's like, yeah, we should vote out Gabby. And I'm like, what the heck?
Right.
This is the thing. I really bonded with a lot of the Davids. If we could have stayed on the Davids for a little bit longer before we swapped, it would have been amazing for me. I mean, people might not believe that because it looked like my name was being thrown out there, but I actually thought I was in an amazing spot on the Davids. I did. I bonded with a lot of them. I even bonded with Jessica, who I voted out, and B and I connected immediately. I just really bonded with the Davids. And then like after the game, I'm really close with Allison. We bonded a lot on Teva. So, I mean, yeah, there were so many amazing people out there.
What was your relationship like with Pat?
So Pat, Pat, was kind of like you saw him on TV. He was this mixture of a little bit brash, a little bit saying jokes that made people a little uncomfortable, but was funny and was kind and was just like a giant teddy bear. Mm-hmm. And he really did help organize the
shelter. Rupert-esque?
I don't think old Gabby would have cried over him being eliminated, but he's such a nice guy. And obviously, like, seeing him get injured was traumatic, to say the least, for all of us. But the thing is, I know you talked to Christian and Nick about this in your recent interviews. I actually feel like I don't know who would have gone home first if we would have lost immunity.
Yeah.
Certainly the story that was being told was Nick. I didn't feel great about it. I know Christian didn't. There's a few people. And in a way, Pat had kind of put a target on his back just by being such a vocal member of camp and being a little bit brash. And it's like, of course, it's horrible how he went out, But I don't know what would have happened if we would have gone back to camp. I don't know.
I mean, how many times in this season alone did the person who was supposed to go home, you know, at the time that the immunity challenge happened, you know, actually go home? You know, it's definitely not 100%. So, you know, it's really who's to say, especially on these first votes, which can often be, you know, really unpredictable, you know, how it's going to play out.
Exactly. And I think actually, if anything is in favor of Nick would have been the first one out, it's because it was literally the first vote where people might have just said, I like him, but I'm not going to stick my neck out for him. So, OK, Nick, it is. But in retrospect, there were a few things. I remember feeling an eerie feeling when we lost the challenge. I mean, of course, like, you know, people make things up. Like, you know, you look back on things and you're like, oh, I felt an eerie feeling. But I did feel a feeling where I was like, I don't know if Nick's going to go home. And one of the things, oh, he's going to get mad at me for telling this, but I actually think that Carl's name might have come up as the possible first one out.
Uh-oh.
I'll tell you why, because I love you, Carl. I don't even think Carl knows this, but Carl had volunteered to be in sort of the showstopper role for the star, you know, whatever. He was the one digging under the thing.
The showstopper.
Is that what it's called? I feel like that's what Jeff called it. The role where you step up for the challenge.
The hero role.
Yeah, like the solo person that's like, I'm going to dig under the sand. And like, it was like in the first challenge, it was like, whoever chops the rope first gets a shortcut. And the other stupid team has to undo a bunch of knots and climb up a ladder. So it was like, that was like a big thing. And that was why we were behind in that first immunity challenge. And Carl volunteered. And I just remember it was like such a weird thing, because before the challenge, you get some time to talk and you're like, who's going to do what part? And I was like, well, B should do it because she's super athletic and she's tiny and she'll dig under the thing and she can chop and whatever. So she'd been chopping coconuts. And Carl was like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. Carl, I can't believe they didn't show it in the episode, because Carl literally got stuck under the log. You had to dig under a log and in the sand. He got stuck because he was wearing this big belt buckle, like a he's like a cowboy, like I don't even know what the belt buckle was, like a rodeo something, and he got stuck, and it was the most uncomfortable thing ever, where it was just like everyone's like, yeah, Carl, oh my god, oh, he's stuck on his belt for like an extraordinary amount of time. And then like even when he got through, he was like really winded, and then we later found out it's because he smoked cigarettes, and he had stopped smoking cigarettes right before coming, and he was super winded. So it was just like an awkward thing where I felt like if I were Nick, and I don't even know if I haven't talked to anyone about this really. I think maybe I've talked to Christian about it, but if I were Nick, like I would have come home at camp and been like, I'm sorry, Carl stepped up for that role and he totally failed. And like, he's not helping us in challenges. And Carl was sort of one of the more vocal figures against Nick too. So I really wonder like, if he might have been so maybe that's just fan fiction, but yeah, could have been.
So I want to actually go to the first vote that you guys had in a tribal council that you figured pretty prominently in, when poor Jessica ends up going home. And, you know, we saw in the episode that you have this conversation with Jessica and B, and you didn't get a great vibe from them. And that really ends up putting you in motion on that vote.
Yeah, and that was pretty accurate. I think what wasn't shown was that I had many more reasons that had made me so paranoid. And one of them was because when we lost that challenge, it was brutal. So this was the challenge where we had to put up the blocks, to put a puzzle, and it was super hot. And keep in mind, this is after 6 days of straight rain. We had like the hottest day ever.
Mm-hmm.
And, after we lost, you see the Davids kind of saying like, oh, it's so unfair. The Goliaths are so much bigger than us. And then you see B kind of give a pep talk where she's like, I don't think it's about size. I think it's
technique.
It's technique. And so what wasn't shown was I actually was one of the loudest proponents of like, I was saying, geez, it really sucks how much bigger the Goliaths are than us, doesn't it? And actually way back in the challenge, like after you lose the challenge, Jeff kind of stands there and talks to you and he's like, so, what happened? You guys sucked. And I actually volunteered to say, like, you know what? It felt really unmatched. I was literally praying for them to win that challenge. It was like so horrible that it was so evident we were not going to win. Like, we had no puzzle pieces up that I was like, oh God, please just let them win already. Like, we're going to have a heat stroke over here. So I had been one of the louder voices of like, oh, you know, it really sucks that the Goliaths are so much stronger than us. And sometimes when you lose, you just want to commiserate, right? You just want to talk about how it sucks.
Blow off steam. Yeah.
Blow off some steam. And I love B. I'm friends with her, but nobody really wants to hear a pep talk right after they lose. And so I had already been feeling some tension with that, where I was one of the loudest voices of what really sucks that they kicked our ass. And she was like, well, I don't think it's okay to make excuses. So when the word around the camp was, we're getting rid of somebody who, you know, challenges aren't their thing. And they don't, I was like, oh my God, are they talking about me? Cause I was the one being the loudest voice of like, you know, these challenges are so hard. And what really made me paranoid was that B, I think she is a newer Survivor fan. And so she doesn't know sort of the things to do when you're in Survivor.
Yeah.
And by the way, since the challenge went 2 hours instead of the, you know, 20 or 40 minutes that probably that they had predicted it would take, there was not much time before tribal. So it's like the sun is setting, you know, you're going to have to go to tribal soon. And so you don't have much time to talk. And so I go up to B, she's standing in the ocean alone, looking out onto the horizon by herself. And I go up to her and I'm like, hey, I'm sorry. You know, I think you're right. It is, you know, about technique. I was kind of frustrated that we lost, but like, are we good? Like, are we voting for Lyrsa? And she's like, yeah, yeah, it's fine. And I'm like, oh, like, are you okay? Keep in mind, she was probably my number one girl. Like, her and Christian were my number ones. And she was like not giving me anything. And it like freaked me out. Because to me, I'm like, oh, we're going to tribal in half an hour. Like, can you please tell me we're voting for Lyrsa? And instead, it's like she is like pissed about the challenge. So I'm freaking out. So anyway, that's the reason why I was so paranoid. Mm-hmm. And I really do feel for Jessica that I do think Jessica was collateral damage sort of the way that actually B was acting. And because B was an MMA fighter and she was really athletic, like she was kept instead of Jess. I mean, I don't think B's name was even brought up, but like the paranoia stemmed from B, not from Jessica.
Okay.
So I feel bad that Jessica was the collateral damage of that.
So I just want to make sure that I'm getting this straight, because so B, she's a professional athlete. She took the losing really hard, and you go to talk to her about the vote, and instead of, you know, engaging with you on a level that an ally normally would before a vote, she's sort of standoffish, and that's what gives you the bad vibes.
Right. And now I know that she wasn't being standoffish towards me because she was mad at me or anything. It was that she really was that upset about the challenge. She is such a competitor. She took it that hard. And she's the type that she just tends to retreat when something bad happens. But of course, that is not what you do in Survivor. And so it set off my paranoia of like, why doesn't she want to talk to me? Why doesn't she want to strategize with me?
Poor Jessica ends up going out. Can you comment on that? Is it true that you and Christian knew Jessica was lying about her age? That was something that she had mentioned in her exit interview.
Yeah. So, oh my gosh, this is so funny because I suspected Jessica was not her age because of the way she acted. And actually, knowing her now, she's a very mature young woman. But at the time, if you guys thought I cried a lot, love Jess, she cried more than me. So what she would cry about would be like missing her mom and things like that. And so her claim was that she was 22 or 23. Like, she was a junior in college. And I was like, no junior in college cries that much about missing their mom, because they like live away from home, you know? And the funniest thing was that
I think she preemptively was saying, I don't drink alcohol because, you know, in case there was an alcohol reward, she couldn't drink it because she's underage. She's under 21. And so she preemptively was saying, oh, I don't drink alcohol. Just in case anyone's wondering, that's just a thing that I'm going to. So we were like, okay, like, yeah, whatever. Everyone teach their own. And one day we're having a conversation. So one thing we love to do on Survivor is fantasize about food. We're like, oh, what would you guys eat right now if you could? Because we're so starving. And we were talking about brunch. Like, he hates eggs. And he was saying he doesn't like any breakfast food with eggs in it. And I'm like, you're not a person. And we had a whole debate about whether, like, eggs are necessary. Like, are eggs a necessary part of breakfast? And I think that's when everyone realized, like, these two are so annoying. They're the only ones that like to talk about these dorky things. We're like, what is the definition of breakfast? But during this conversation, Jessica, and I love her, and I would never condone underage drinking, but she goes, mimosas. I would go for mimosa. I'm like, oh, like, I thought you said you didn't drink. And she's like, no, I mean, I've heard that they're good. Like, I orange juice. So obviously that's a funny way to find out that somebody is underage. And I'm sure that's the truth, right? Mm-hmm. Jessica has never drank a mimosa. She would never break the law. But so there was a little bit of a disconnect between like, oh, I don't drink. And then like, mimosas. And what was funny was I was talking to Christian one day privately, and I was like, do you think Jessica's 22? And he's like, no, she's 19. She's 19. He knew that she was 19. He had heard on a certain other podcast that she was 19. So that was like, this is the kind of thing that connected me and Christian from the very beginning, was that we would kind of ask each other like seemingly obscure questions, or like almost questions that to anybody else, it would reveal like, oh my gosh, this person is thinking way too hard, is like overanalyzing. But because he and I are both overanalyzers, we were both like, oh yeah, we totally get that. When we got to the David camp, like when he and I were first sort of becoming allies, I asked him, I was like, he had been the one to untie the shelter building kit that we won. And I was like, hey, I know that this is like, we're just starting the game, but like, I have to know, like, did you see a clue or anything, like a clue for an idol in the shelter building kit? And that's like a kind of risky thing to ask, you know, because you don't want people to be like, oh, this girl's playing too hard. This girl, like, you know, like she's overdoing it. But Christian later told me, like outside of the, like at Ponderosa, he told me that that actually was like a key thing that made him see me as a potential ally, because he had been thinking, oh, I wonder if there's a clue in here. And so like the fact that I was bold enough to ask him, oh, is there a clue, showed him that I was willing to talk strategy with him. So he and I always like connected on that kind of thing.
Okay. So ultimately you guys send Jessica home, but you know, in that very next episode, we do see a lot of people throwing you under the bus. Nick, especially, throwing you under the bus to, B and Carl and Davey. Did you have any sense that was going on at that time?
No. Do you know how shocking it was to watch that episode? I remember, oh my God, I remember watching it and being like, are you serious? Like, was I actually in danger? Because my perspective was I was not in danger at all. And I actually shot Nick a text and was like, were you guys really going to vote me out? And he was like, no. So, I mean, I don't know. I think you said that on your podcast, but maybe I'm just like, I'm in denial, but I was shook. I was shook that they were throwing me out there. And I was kind of hurt because I was like, are these people stupid enough to buy this? Like, how can Nick, who was one of the swing votes, tell people it was Gabby's move? I'm like, you know, it took three of us. Like, it really took Christian and Nick to be the ones to decide. Like, I was like, how impressionable are Davey and Nick, or Davey and B and Carl, that they're just believing that it's me. And I do feel like, it's much easier to blame the sort of like neurotic, emotional girl than it is to blame the sweet old Southern boy or the calculating scientist, right? Like, of course I'm the easy one to throw under the bus. What hurt me about that was actually that I had tried to talk to in particular B, because I was so close with her the night after, like immediately after we got back from tribal, where I just wanted to explain what happened. And again, like, I just think B doesn't know like the dynamics of Survivor, where she like didn't want to talk to me. Like, I was like, hey, do you want to talk? And she was like, no, I'm going to sleep. Pulled her hoodie over her eyes, like, did not talk to me. So that sucked to see the next day, like, sort of people getting in before I got a chance to and throwing me under the bus. Because I eventually did get a chance to apologize to Davey and Carl and B. And I didn't know that. I think Nick had maybe beat them to it and, like, gotten in their ear before I did. But, I mean, if I had to be honest, I don't really think I was in danger. I think that B was probably in danger after that.
Okay, so you guys are going to ultimately avoid the tribal council here for that round. And then you're going to get to the swap. And you and Christian are going to swap to Teva. Do I have that right?
Yeah, Teva.
Teva.
Or, I mean, I remember one time... John very confidently said, go team Tavi. And we were all like, no, that's not what we are called.
Now, there's a lot of time in the episodes that's spent to your insecurity in your position in the tribe here. Was that close to how you actually felt? Or is that just sort of, you know, a couple of weak moments over the course of 6 or 9 days, however long you were all together on that beach?
No, that was totally how it was. So I think the thing that doesn't come across in the episode is that when we are swapped, first of all, our tribe has to build a brand new shelter. So like all the days spent doing that, you know, you don't really have time to like have private conversations. You don't really have time to look for idols because literally like you have to build a new shelter. I did look for idols when I went to the water well alone, like I looked for idols. We didn't have much time. We had to immediately build a shelter. We didn't have much time to bond with each other. And the very next day was immunity and tribal council. So it's not like we had like a full 3 days to even bond on these new tribes. It was like we had 24 hours. So that scene that you see of me crying in the early morning to Christian was completely real because, first of all, we had gone to sleep in basically a half-assed shelter. It was probably one of the worst nights out there where, of course, it was raining. I mean, it rained 13 days straight out there every night. So we're on day 11 of this, and it's raining, and we didn't have a proper roof because, like, we had to build a whole shelter in 2 hours. And it was like one thing that I underestimated, I think, as a fan was the physical stuff and how it matters. So, like, we kind of slept man, woman, because we thought it was like a better spread of body warmth. And I somehow ended up on the edge, or maybe I was between like John and Christian. But like, because John and I didn't know each other, like we didn't, like, I didn't get much warmth off of him. And it just felt like, I was like, oh my gosh, like we are physically segregated. Like it was like the Goliaths were kind of sleeping together. And it was like, I woke up the next morning and I was like, not only do I feel like I'm on the outs of this tribe, but like I just had the worst night of sleep of my life because John didn't even like try to help keep me warm. And I remember, like, it seems like such a silly thing, like, but it's like it to me, it was like a physical representation of like I'm on the outs, literally. Like I'm literally shivering on the outs. So the next morning I woke up and it was like a combination of being like, holy crap, that was the worst night I've ever had. I was so cold and wet. And telling Christian, and he and I were lucky enough to have this sort of relationship where, like, I did feel like it was more productive to have a conversation where I said, I'm really scared. I think I'm on the bottom. Like, I think I'm going home today if we lose this challenge, which, to be fair, I think we would have. I think I would have. And I think this whole experience on Teva gave me a clearer perspective on what it means to be swap screwed. I think as a fan, I was always like, there's always a way out. There's always a way that you can find your way out and you can strategize. I mean, let me tell you, I had less than 24 hours to work. Couldn't find an idol. Couldn't find whatever. There was 3 Goliaths and 2 of us, and they liked Christian more than me. My butt would have been going home if we lost. And so it gave me so much respect for, like, I mean, I've seen people that, like, I could kind of relate to before in the past. Like I think of, like, Rourke in season 35 or people like that where I'm like, oh my gosh, I actually think that sometimes you just get swap screwed. And so thank goodness that we won the challenge. But yeah, I surely was on the bottom at that tribe.
Especially when you swap to small numbers where, you know, you get swapped to a group of five or six, that can be, you know, really tough to get out of the spot if you end up going to the tribal council.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. And actually, what was funny about that is I saw a lot of people online afterwards saying, why is she so upset? She's on the strongest team and she has nothing to worry about. And she's with her closest ally, like she's with Christian. Those were the exact reasons I was terrified. Because I'm on this team of very physically fit people, where I think the perception was like, oh, we're going to win every challenge, which of course we went on to do, but that's never a given. I was like, well, surely if we lose, they'll eliminate the weakest physical person, which was me. Like, in a way, like, that's worse luck, right? Like, wouldn't it have been better for me to be swapped with, like a Lyrsa or a Natalie, where I could argue I'm better at challenges, I'm better at puzzles, that they would keep me over that person? But, like, the other thing was, I didn't want to be swapped with my closest ally. Kristen and I were so close that I felt like if we had been on different swap tribes, we would have reconnected at the merge and been fine. To me, it was a detriment that I was with somebody that was basically the male version of me. Like, we're the exact same person. Mm-hmm. Both good at, we're both, like, you know, smart. We're both, like, you know, if you had to pick someone for a puzzle, like, maybe you would pick us. So I'm like, well, no one's going to pick me for a puzzle. Like, it's not like they're going to be like, oh, we have to keep Gabby because she's good at puzzles. Because they'll be like, oh, well, Christian's good at puzzles. So it's like, it for me, it was actually the worst possible scenario to be with someone that's so similar to you, but, like, slightly better than you. Like, he's slightly more, he's like more social, that he was better at getting along with them than me.
Right.
Like, it was horrible. So people were like, I don't know why she's complaining, she's on the best tribe. I'm like, yeah, but when you're the weakest person on the best tribe, that's bad. Whereas if you look at someone like Nick, he's like the strongest person on the weakest tribe. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think that that's a coincidence. I don't think that it's a coincidence that the Jibini three ended up in the final three. I mean, it happened in a roundabout way, but, like, look at it. Nick is the strongest person on the weakest tribe. Of course he's going to be safe. Of course they're going to keep him. Whereas if you look at me, they're like, well, she's expendable. Our team's going to win all the challenges. Let's not risk it. Let's get rid of the weakest person.
So is there some conclusion that you're taking away from that Nick was the strongest person on the weakest group? Like, is there a formula that we can mine from this?
I think that luck has a huge part of Survivor. And obviously, like, I mean, I think Nick played an amazing game. But do I also think that Nick was really lucky to be swapped onto a tribe? So the first thing is, upon first glance, you might be like, wow, Nick, like, that sucks for Nick. He's on this, like, kind of weak tribe with, you know, like, some of the weaker physical players. They're going to lose challenges upon first glance. But then you're like, well, Natalie is probably, you know, people are always going to want to vote Natalie out. Lyrsa, like, she's a little bit on the weaker side, so people might want to vote her out. Like, Angelina is so contentious. Mike is a millionaire. Like, did he actually hit the lottery with who his swap tribe was and who he was able to work with going forward? Like, of course, like, I give testament to people's social game and like, plenty of other things that they did. But, and it might just be a coincidence, but for me, it was like, I mean, that's pretty crazy. Like, mm-hmm. like, he ended up in the final three with the three people that were remaining from probably the weakest tribe. I mean, it was a joke when we got to the merge that Mike would actually always joke about. He would say, oh, Jibini, like, Jibini totally Jibini'd it. It became like slang for messing something up. It'd be like, don't Jibini it.
Yeah.
Because it was like slang for, like, don't mess it up and, like, don't be horrible and, like, the worst ones out here. So, like, is that a strategy to seem, you know, unthreatening, where it's like, no one's targeting the Jibinis because it's like, oh, it's the Jibinis. Boom, before you blink, and then they're in the final
three. Yeah, I do think that there are a couple of things to take away from that. I mean, I don't know necessarily about, you know, Nick being swapped to a tribe where he was physically the strongest person there. But the fact that they went to two tribal councils before the merge, we talk about this a lot on the podcast in terms of, you know, when you vote together as a group, it does sort of bond you together. So they did have sort of a bond that that I think that probably people were sleeping on in terms of those three people reconnecting, where they went through a couple of votes together. And then also because that they were only three of them, that they weren't seen as like a threatening group coming into the merge. So they did have that sort of like, you know, Matt Singh vibe to them of, you know, we don't have to worry about them as a block.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I remember when we were on Ponderosa, I think Elizabeth, she's a super fan. She brought up to me some statistic that I had never heard, that it was like,
maybe you know it, but I mean, I don't know the numbers, but it was like, did you know that like whatever number, whatever percentage of winners come from the minority tribe, like the tribe that was in the minority going to the merge? And it was like, oh my God, here you go. Here's Jabini. And I mean, I don't think that was like an active thought on our season, where I don't think people were like, oh, like it's Tiva versus Vugu versus Jabini. Like, it wasn't like, oh, it's heroes versus healers versus hustlers, which I, like, it kind of was on season 35. I don't think it was that, but I do think there is something to be said about like, is it a strategy in Survivor to be underestimated? Like, obviously it's relevant for the theme of David versus Goliath, but like, if I, and I'm not trying to take away credit from any of their games, but if I look at the final three, those were three people that like, they never really came up as threats during the game. Mm-hmm. Like everyone was like, I think Nick actually really benefited from being almost the first one out. And it was kind of like, oh, well, that's just Nick. Like, it's like he really wasn't viewed as a threat. He really, really wasn't. And like, good for him. That's good social game, too. I'll give props to that. But I do think part of it is like, being a flawed person in Survivor is actually a benefit.
Yeah.
Because look how the game treated Christian, who like, to me, is one of the best social players there has been, where it was. And when I say that, I mean like everyone liked him. Everyone loved him. He was friends with everybody. Like, that is dangerous in Survivor, because people, including your number one ally, don't want to sit next to you in the end. Maybe there's something to be said about being a flawed player, intentionally, unintentionally. Maybe that's just the way you are. Maybe you kind of rub people the wrong way. Maybe, you know, like, I think for Nick, I think one of his flaws, which actually helped him in the game, is that he's kind of like an emotional person. And I know that's funny coming from me, but like, you see the way Nick reacts after the Carl vote. You see the way Nick reacts after the Davey vote. And he, he's kind of emotional. And I think that ironically, I mean, at least for somebody like him, who's maybe got like the Southern charm or whatever, that it's like, oh, well, like, you know, he's so volatile, or he's so easy to read, mm-hmm. that I don't really see him as a threat. I'm more worried about people like Christian and Davey, who are so likable. It's almost like your flaws benefit you in Survivor. So it's like, should you purposely be a flawed player? Should you purposely make blunders? Or is it just the luck of the draw of like, you know, your personality mixed with the swap tribe that you're coming in on? Like, I don't know. This is what makes Survivor so interesting.
Yeah, I do think you're onto something, where I'm a big believer in the people that are the threats are sometimes not the threats because you know they're the threats. The real threats are the threats that you don't know are the threats.
I think I followed that, and I agree. And it's like this weird meta thing, right? And I think I remember like hearing you guys talk about this on the podcast before, where it's like, well, does them not being a threat make them a threat? And then, but then does them being a threat make them not a threat? And it's like, how many layers down you go before you're like, is this person a freaking threat or not?
Yeah.
And that's just what makes Survivor so interesting season after season. This is why we're on season 37, coming on 38. Is because it changes every season. And I think it's the culture of the season that prevails, that determines how people view things. I think our season was very big, maybe because of the theme. It was very big on like getting rid of evident threats. And I'll just speak to, I'm kind of jumping ahead, but like me personally, the last season we had seen was season Healers versus whatever.
Season 35, in completion.
That's just a mouthful, right?
Yeah.
Where we had seen Ben win his way from the final. Can you fact check me? Is it final 8 or final 7?
I want to say it was the final 7.
Okay. So, I mean, he won his way through, right? Or he idled, whatever you want to call it.
He was immune, yeah, from that point on.
But he was such a threat. He was somebody that people were talking about as a threat. And then, like, don't you like feel kind of dumb if you let the threat get to the end? I mean, you even look at like millennials versus Gen X, like everyone was like, we are going to look so dumb if we're sitting next to David Wright in the end. Like whoever is dubbed the threat of that season, you look really dumb if they're sitting at the end. Everyone is like, why didn't you get rid of that person earlier? And we get a little bit of Mike saying that in to the Goliaths where he says, everyone watching at home is talking about Christian. He's either a threat or he's not. So I think it's like whatever the sort of culture or the narrative that arises out of your season, that's what you have to work with. And in our season, maybe because it was underdogs versus top dogs, David versus Goliath, it was like, if you sit next to someone who is a perceived threat in the end, you are the biggest dummy out there. Like it was very, very focused on getting threats out.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever a threat meant at that time in the game, which was, that's another interesting thing about Survivor. It's like, how do you define a threat?
Yeah. And a lot of times you're dealing with, you know, everybody out there is a threat in one way or another.
Yeah. I mean, and something, I won't take credit for this. I think Christian was the one that he and I talked about at Ponderosa. It's like, what's the difference between an imminent threat versus a long-term threat? Where a long-term threat might be like, that's somebody like a jury threat, where you're like, I don't want to be sitting next to them at the end because I'm going to lose against them. An imminent threat might be, they are causing danger to my game at this very moment, in these couple days. Like maybe they're good at challenges, or maybe they have an idol, or maybe they're coming after me. That makes them an imminent threat. And so this is a game. It's like, it's balancing. When do you get rid of an imminent threat? When do you get rid of a long-term threat? Who's going to become a threat? Who have we not anticipated that is a threat right now, but that actually makes them a threat because nobody sees them as a threat? Like that's maybe more of a Nick.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Can I ask you a question about the jury in terms of the, you know, long-term threat? How much can a Survivor player really get a sense of how the jury is going to vote in terms of making their assessments about the other players? Because in my head, I feel like it's a little bit of a crapshoot in terms of knowing mm-hmm. exactly what the jury is thinking as you're with a couple people on the jury.
It's hard. Yeah. Isn't that the hardest part of Survivor? It's like, how can you be in the game and trying to predict what the jury thinks? And I think we saw a little bit of a mismatch in that in our game. I can speak to that having been on the jury for sort of the second third of the game. You know, I was juror number six, so there was sort of like four people after me. I will say Allison was talked about as a huge jury threat when we were in the game. Everyone was like, if you sit next to Allison, like you're losing, you're a dummy. Like she's winning. Nick was a huge proponent of this. I mean, it was just a thing that people believed. And I do think she was a threat to a certain extent. She had really good, personal connections with people. She was just likable. Like, you know, there's certain people it's hard to portray on TV that it's just like, they're just a likable person. People just liked them. I will say in the later part of the jury, like maybe sort of around when Allison eventually got eliminated, I think the perception around that had maybe deflated a bit, where people were like, oh, okay, she survived a bunch, but like, has she had agency? Like what, you know, like, so for me, for people like that, it's like it depends on how their final tribal goes. And I think Allison is amazingly eloquent I think she could have had an amazing final tribal. But like, I guess the point I'm trying to make is I think sometimes people in the game get obsessed with somebody and sort of label somebody as a threat.
Mm-hmm.
If the jury maybe is not perceiving them as a threat. And another example of that, and I love her to death, but was probably Kara, where I know Nick was, you know, he even said, I think if I sit next to Kara or Mike, I might lose and whatever. And on the jury, I don't know that we totally saw Kara's game. I do think she's extremely articulate. Oh my gosh, she's an amazing speaker. She's a real estate agent. You know, she's so good at speaking. She's so likable. Never got a vote against her the whole game. That is impressive.
Mm-hmm.
She could have had an incredible final tribal and explained her game. But at the time, I think the jury was having a little bit of a hard time. And like, if you look at Allison's Ponderosa, she has a little section where she's saying, you know, she had to decide between targeting Mike or targeting Kara. And in the Ponderosa video, I actually say, well, I think targeting Mike was the right decision because I think Mike is the bigger threat than Kara. And it's nothing against Kara, but again, I think it is just like, it is so hard to know who is perceived as a threat in the game versus what the jury is thinking. I don't think that Nick perceived Mike to be as big of a jury threat as he was. Yet he perceived Kara to be a huge threat. So it's just like, yeah, I don't know how you can predict that kind of thing. It's really hard.
Is this the kind of stuff that comes up at tribal council a lot?
I think, what do you mean by that actually?
Because we only get to see a couple minutes of tribal council and, you know, everybody else talks about it goes on for so long. But sometimes I think about well, what are the, how much can you take away from what people are saying at the tribal council? Because, you know, how much of it is people just saying nothing and how much of it is sort of like actionable information that you could take away from that conversation?
Oh my gosh. Being on the jury is so hard because when you're watching tribal council, I swear to you, 80% of it doesn't make sense. It's like everyone's just saying these like catchphrases, like they're on a freaking sitcom. Everyone's like, well, my favorite 5-letter word is trust. And you're like, what? What does that mean? Like voting out? Like why? What happened at camp for the last 3 days? And you hear people kind of like try to drop things. And that's when you see, you know, me as a jury member, like, you know, Angelina's like, oh, you made me work for that idol, Jeff. And then as a jury member, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't stop talking about it. So it's like, it is such a hard balance to play, to find right between like, let me tell the jury what happened, but not, let me not seem like I'm pandering. And I think I heard Elizabeth say in one of her exit interviews, like she would get so annoyed when people would be smiling at her on the jury. Cause it's like, you know, don't pander to me. Mm-hmm. So I think as a player, you have to, I don't know, maybe you have to hope that people that are voted out end up telling people in the jury what happened. But I mean, it's so confusing being a jury member. And that's why I took my duty as a jury member so seriously, because I was aware that like everything we were hearing during tribal was like, I'm like, what does it really mean? I don't really get any of it. So every time somebody came home to Ponderosa, you'd be like, tell me everything. Oh my God, tell me about everything. I think that our jury was great. I think that we discussed things as a group. I didn't hear too much of like somebody championing for somebody. I don't think we were a very bitter jury. I don't think, you know, people weren't lying or people weren't coming back and saying, well, so-and-so was so mean to me. And like, it was very much like game related. We were, I think so much of our cast were fans that we were just like, oh, we just want to know what happened.
Gabby, what about as a player when you were in the game, when you're talking at tribal council, especially after the merge, like who is your intended audience? Is it Jeff? Is it the jury or is it the people at home?
Oh my gosh. It's all three, right? That's what's so hard. I think like, I really had fun kind of talking to the jury in a wink, wink way. So it's funny because I'm like, oh, don't pander to the jury. And then I'm like, but I really had fun doing it, where it's just that you find clever ways to drop it in. Like I remember when we came back from the immunity challenge that lasted 5.5 hours with Alec and Christian. Of course, I hadn't won, but I wanted the jury that hadn't been there to know that I lasted 2.5 hours. So like, I remember Jeff asked me a question about it and I just like casually was like, yeah, Jeff, you know, standing up there for 2.5 hours, like looks at Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. I'm probably not as smooth as I think I am, but it's like, it is such a delicate balance between wanting to give Jeff an answer that satisfies him, tells a story to the jury that like, if you're at the final tribal council, you're like, it's a consistent story, right? Everything I've been saying makes sense. And not giving things away to your alliance partners. And I think that was the most fun part of Survivor was like, I mean, I'm a writer, so I love like storytelling. And I remember the one that stands out to me was the vote where Carl went home. And it always stuck out in my mind because Christian had an amazing analogy where he talked about poached eggs. Mm-hmm. I remember that was one vote where I was like, I know exactly what's happening. Holy crap. I'm about to pull off a blindside. And it is so interesting when you're in the position of like, you're the one that's going to make the big move. You're hearing what everyone else is saying and they think that they're tricking you, right? So like in this case, I'll try not to get like too detailed, but in this case, like the Davids had lied to me and said like, we're voting for Angelina, but really they were voting for Allison. So everything they were saying, you could tell was like veiled in that it like kind of made sense where they were almost talking about Angelina, but it was like, I could read through it and I could hear what they were really saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's so fun to sort of come up with these analogies, or like when Christian says the poached eggs analogies and everyone laughs, including Nick and Angelina and all these people who are about to be blindsided. I'm like, I know what it really means. Like, it's like you're pleasing Jeff with the answer, but you're also saying, no, like this is the rationale for what I'm about to do. And of course, you'll go back to camp and you'll explain it to the people that you just blindsided. But it is this sort of like powerful feeling where you're like, I am telling this story. I am telling this narrative. Everything will make sense after the fact. Maybe it's a little bit of theater now, but oh my gosh, it's such an exhilarating feeling.
Do you think that if there wasn't the hidden immunity idol, do you think that people would be more forthcoming at Tribal Council?
That's a great question. Maybe. I mean, do you think people were really forthcoming in the early seasons before there was an immunity idol? What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I guess what's the danger then at that point? So like hypothetically, let's just say that there wasn't a hidden immunity idol. I mean, would those guys still sort of be really coy about what they're doing because they don't want to upset you where then you're going to then, you know, start to reveal their secrets to the rest of the group?
Yeah, or is it? That's what I was thinking.
Or is it that people are just afraid that, I don't know, what if Allison has the idol? I don't want her, you know, to tip her off in terms of what we're doing tonight.
Yeah, I think idols are part of it. But I mean, with Carl, like I knew Carl didn't have an idol. I wasn't nervous about that. I think it's twofold. I think part of it is you don't want to be embarrassed. I think pride is a huge thing. You don't want to be out in tribal being like, I'm voting for blah, blah, blah. And then your vote doesn't work. And then like you look like a dumb idiot. So like you're kind of hedge behind what you're saying and make what you're saying be able to apply to several situations.
Yeah.
You're just going to look so silly if you're like, well, I'm voting based on, we kind of saw it in like the Jessica vote. It's like, I'm voting based on challenge strength, like by Lyrsa. And then it's like, oh, that's awkward because you went home with Lyrsa. So it's sort of like saving face in a way. And I think the other half of it is maybe it is like proving to your alliance that you are capable of being sly and being smooth and not letting things up. You're trustworthy. Like you're not going to. I mean, that was a huge thing that we talked about, actually. Back at the second vote after the merge. So when the crazy vote where John went home, but the Goliaths had voted for Christian. One of the things that was talked about afterwards was that I kind of thought Angelina gave away who they were voting for by the way she was talking at Tribal. And of course, this goes back to your original question, because it's like there was an idol. So that it's like, did it reveal, you know, who we should play the idol on? Mm-hmm. I say wasn't even a part of that vote, but that's another story. But it's like, I think it kind of frustrates your allies when you go back to camp and you're like, oh my gosh, like you kind of gave away who we were voting for, you know, like you were a little bit transparent. And I know I'm one to speak because here I am at the Elizabeth vote, like crying and being so transparent. And like, but the truth is, I do think that that hurt me. So I think there's something to be said about being able to like be very in control and not give away who you're voting for, because it makes you a more reliable alliance partner.
Okay, well, let's talk about the merge and the vote where Elizabeth went home. And, you know, I talked about on the podcast that I really thought that, oh, okay, this is all part of the plan. And I really thought, okay, oh, Gabby is doing this for effect because this strike force is going to come together. But, you know, it as has been, you know, discussed very much debunked. And look, I love when I'm wrong about stuff because it makes it fun to talk about the show. I mean, if I was right all the time, I mean, why would anybody listen to the show? I'll just ruin it for everybody every single week. But I thought that was at least a fun theory to talk about.
I first of all appreciate just the credit that everyone given me for like thinking I'm an amazing actress and then I'm this super crazy manipulative, like whatever. My answer, which is the answer that I would give for like the play in the sand scene and the like Allison scene where we talk about blindsiding Dan and like any of the scenes where you see me strategizing, but also showing a lot of emotion, is that, it is really me. It's really me. And I really am emotional, but I am hyper aware when I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, this is like a hard thing to explain because the strike force, let's talk about the strike force. Because to me, I think it was kind of pinned on me in the episode, and I don't deny that I think I was probably the most suspicious of the strike force. However, I don't think from right away. So if you look at when we're forming the strike force, I say, oh, this is the most excited I've been about a group. And I really meant it. The thing about the strike force is that was the only conversation we had.
Yeah.
Maybe half an hour. And so, and then the rest of the day, the Goliaths are gallivanting up and down the beach, which I talk about in confessional also. I'm like, they are walking up and down the beach. It's so on theme and blah, 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 because it like lasted way longer.
Right.
Me, how am I supposed to trust in the strike force? Trust me, I want to, right? I want to work with Alec. I want to work with Allison. I want to work with Mike. How am I supposed to trust that it's real when we've had a 30-minute conversation, there's no vote to prove it, right? There's no trust vote because it's like, oh, everyone's voting for Elizabeth. So, okay, I don't actually know if we're actually together. And then the very next vote, they go for Christian. So it's like, so I don't know if I was ever on board with the strike force. So crying for Elizabeth, I don't know. It wasn't like I'm covering up the strike force. It was like I had the strike force in my back pocket. Mm-hmm. Part of it was I was very, very scared, and I think rightfully so, that it would become a pagonging, a picking off of the David alliance by the Goliaths because of the way they were acting. So I think for me, like, it's a little bit of a privileged position for Mike. You know, the next episode, Mike is like, well, Gabby kind of spooked me because she was crying during tribal. Well, when you're the one in a position of power. So in the strike force, there's three Goliaths, three Davids, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who are the ones in power in that strike force? It's the Goliaths,
right?
Because they have the numbers sort of like as a safety net. They have the Goliath numbers. They should be, in my opinion, the ones doing the reassuring, doing the like, no, we're really going to do this. Mike shouldn't be spooked by me being like scared that you guys want to pick off two Davids before you pick off a Goliath. Like, that's insane. So that was what they talked about, is they said, well, we want to do Dan, but first we want to get rid of two Davids. Okay, so you guys want to put the numbers at, what would that make it? 7-4?
Yeah.
No, 7-4?
Yeah,
because it was 7-6, right? So 7-4, I'm like, well, sure, that sounds like a great idea. You get rid of Dan and it's still 6-4. It's like ridiculous, right? How could you expect us to do that? So, like, I think that was a little frustrating to see that in the episode where it's like, Gabby ruined the strike force because she cried. And it's like, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Like, was the strike force really going to happen? And I correctly intuited that it was all always kind of BS.
Mm-hmm.
Or was it like, was me being so upset, did that spook Mike? I don't know. And I think we'll never know. And I've talked to Mike about it, and I still don't think we know. Yeah. Came the first, the chicken or the egg?
The jacket or the egg?
The jacket or the egg. So I didn't want to put all my eggs in the strike force jacket.
That's right. The way that I was looking at it was that I felt like that I didn't see a way, and you guys ended up with all the advantages, which ended up getting the numbers back to even. Mm-hmm. But I really thought that you guys had no leverage, and I kind of felt like none. That this, you sort of like had to be in the, you know, thank you, sir, may I have another mentality.
Exactly.
Of to go along with whatever they wanted to do, because I didn't see another path for you guys.
That's right. And I remember talking to actually Angelina, who I would go on to have zero strategic relationship with. But I remember talking to her about that during the merge, where she was like, hey, I just want to know, like, of course, now I know it's because she was rallying for Christian. At the time she came up to me, she said, why is it Elizabeth? Who said Elizabeth? And I said, honestly, I think it's because the Davids know that it's going to be one of us. And at this point, I do think that the merge vote is almost like a first vote, mm-hmm. the first game, where it's anyone but me, because you kind of need to figure out what the hell's happening. And so we were like, crap. David's going home because of the numbers, because the Goliaths were so Goliath strong. David's going home. Anyone but me. Anyone but me. And it was hurt by the fact that Carl was throwing Elizabeth's name out there sort of before the Davids even got a chance to talk and decide what our game plan was going to be. Carl would be like post merge fees, a couple of beers in them, like talking to Dan and Alec or whoever, like in front of Goliath saying, Elizabeth's got to go. And it's like, oh, okay. Oh, I guess we're just turning on each other. Like, we're definitely not going to try to stick together. Okay, that's cool. So it really became like a game of anyone but me. And unfortunately, Elizabeth was that target. And yeah, I mean, I said it in the season, like it was like I didn't want to rely on hope as a strategy. And to me, relying on the strike force, like that was annoying to me when people were like, Gabby ruined the strike force. She should have just been patient. Well, how stupid would I have looked if I had, quote unquote, been patient, waited two votes for them to vote two Davids off, and then they screwed me? Like, I would have looked so stupid. I didn't want to rely on hope, and I didn't want to rely on hope that the strike force was real either. Mm-hmm. The other thing, I just wanted to explain why I was so upset at the tribal where Elizabeth was eliminated. Like, why was I crying? It seemed so random. Because, and I think Christian talked about this a little bit in his interview, Elizabeth was fighting super hard to stay in, and I felt like the Goliaths were being a little dismissive of her. And they actually were kind of like laughing at her when she got up and she started trying to whisper to people. And I thought it was kind of rude. Like, it was like we all knew she was going home. I just wanted to kind of let her like go out swinging and try to do everything she could to save herself. And it just like became gossip central and everyone's kind of laughing at her. So that's why I got so upset, because I love her so much. And it was like, that's one of the things where is it great survivor strategy? Probably not for me to be crying at that merge tribal council, but like, oh my gosh, it was really hard to watch.
Okay.
That's all.
How long were you looking for an idol after the merge feast?
Oh my gosh. Can I tell you this story about the stupid idol?
Yes, please.
Nick already told it in his.
Well, I want to hear your perspective.
I needed to go on record because this clue, okay, at the merge feast that is like, everything you need for the merge is right here. I actually purposely was the one that read it out loud because I like sensed, my spidey senses were tingling. I was like, something is happening. Like, there's a clue, something is happening. And I handed out the bus because I was like, okay, let me see if there's something mm-hmm. here. And then like I lingered at the sign for a little bit longer, looked at it, and I'm like, I don't know what it means, because it was obvious like there wasn't an idol right there at the sign where it said, everything you need for the merge is right here. Go back, like, whatever. It's the merge. Everyone's talking. Everyone's trying to figure out what's happening. It was in the middle of the night that I figured it out. We were going to sleep. It was really weird going to sleep that first merge night. It was so segregated. So what had happened was we were on Teva Beach, right? So we had a one shelter that had kind of fit the five of us for Teva. We had to build another. We called it Shelter A and Shelter B, or we called the original shelter, we called it the mansion, and the other shelter, we called it the shack. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like worse made. Like, it wasn't as comfortable, and they were separate. And the Goliaths literally all slept in one, and the Davids slept in one that first merge night so it seemed. And I think like, people started shifting, like I think Allison and whoever, like it kind of got shifted around.
And the Goliaths had the mansion?
No, actually the Davids had the mansion.
Oh, what a twist.
I know. Well, it was a twist because the Goliaths were much more like, they were so much cooler than us. And like, everything was like a fun sleepover to them because it wasn't like their survivor lives were in danger. So all the Davids, we slept together. We were like, oh my God, guys, what are we going to do? Like, in the dead of night, we're whispering, like, what are we going to do? Oh my God, we're so screwed. And the Goliaths are over there, like in the other shelter, like laughing and flirting. And like, you kind of see scenes of it with like, you know, Dan and Kara, and actually Elizabeth was over there too, because it eventually got mixed up. But like, they're all laughing and treating it like it's a slumber party. And that was sort of the mood around camp, where it was like the Davids were like, holy crap, we are about to be picked off. And the Goliaths would like walk up and down the beach. Like, it was like Swimsuit Illustrated, like so cool. They were like the cool jocks. So it was just hilarious to see the segregation. So in the middle of the night, I'm like thinking, what can we do? Can we trick them in a way? Like, would there make them somehow accidentally split the votes because they think that they're voting for one person and they actually half of them vote for the other person. And then actually, you know, the six of us will have the true majority because they're going to split their votes, like whatever, thinking of all these crazy mm-hmm. things. And then literally like a light bulb went off where I was like, I know what the clue means. I know what the clue means. It was a picture of a palm tree. It's that freaking palm tree at the end of the thing. Everyone was asleep. So I was like, I'm not going to look for it right now. I'm going to look first thing in the morning. First thing in the morning, I tell Christian, I'm like, this is the clue. This is what it means. We need to look there. He had no idea. He was like, I don't even know what you're talking about. I'm like, the napkin holders, the sign, it's all the palm tree. He has no idea. I look, I can't find it. So you know this from talking to Nick. Nick and Davey had already found it. They had already found it. So I'm looking for at the right place. It doesn't exist. The hilarious thing is that then I tell Nick, cause I'm like, whatever, Christian's useless. He's not like helping me find this. I know it's there. I know it's at the palm tree. Like, I am so proud of myself for figuring out this clue. I tell Nick and I'm like, Nick, this is what the clue means. It's over there. We got to go look. We go look. We're like literally digging. This like fake guy. He's like
fake guy.
He already has it. It's like in his pocket, right? And he's like looking for it with me. And I'm like, it's here, Nick. I know it's here. Like, I'm not crazy. Mm-hmm. It's not there because it's in his pocket. So, oh my gosh, you know how frustrating that is? It's like all this talk about like women never find idols and blah blah blah. And for once, like I actually solved a puzzle, and. So that's kind of annoying because I actually solved it from like the merge puzzle clue and like Nick and Davey found it on like a scavenger hunt they found it rolled up. Well, obviously if you see the picture again, you're going to like take a closer look at it. The thing for me is I remember remembering the sign and like we couldn't take any of the merge feast stuff with us. So I couldn't look at the sign again.
Mm-hmm.
And so like this is some of the thing where I think about like the idol discrepancy in Survivor. I do wonder how it can be solved. And I think a really good way to solve it is by doing clues that are accessible to everyone, like the clue that they did. However, then the clue was re-hidden in the jungle, which I do think like these scavenger hunts that take place in jungles, for some reason, they're much more likely to be found by men because the women are sitting around camp, you know, like sewing our clothes up, the rice, whatever.
Yeah.
And the men are just like gallivanting. And so it's like, what if Davey and Nick had not found the clue in the jungle, right?
Yeah.
I probably would have found the clue. I would have figured it out first because to my knowledge, I don't think anybody else figured out the clue besides me. So it's like, how do we, right?
It made more sense in sort of the timeline in terms of like the way that the episode was shown in terms of, okay, that there was the merge feast and then nobody found it. And then mm-hmm. the next episode, it was like the producers are like, hey guys, you missed it at the merge feast. But it is weird mm-hmm. that there was the merge feast and then they immediately, you know, found a clue to the same thing that was at the merge feast so close right after the feast.
I know. And so that's the thing. I don't know if it was like hidden because, you know, like nobody had looked for it. Like it did take me 12 hours before
to process it. Yeah.
To process it. I was literally thinking about it constantly. And it was like a light bulb moment where I was like, I know what it means, but I totally understand if you're the producers, if you're the producers on the show. And I never said anything out loud
mm-hmm.
until I went to go look for it because I didn't know it. So they don't know what's happening in my head. So they're probably thinking, well, no one figured it out. We better plant a clue. But they don't know that like I've been processing it for 12 hours. And so it was pretty funny. Like by the time I went to go look for it, I remember like I was pretty sure that there was something there because like whatever, like I talked about it in confessionals and stuff like that. They were like, oh, like you seem obsessed with this palm tree. And I was like, yeah, there's something there. I was literally like, I was obsessed. It was like, I was like a freak. And the frustrating thing is then later, like when Christian finds his idol, when the Davids wake up really early to go do their idol hunting,
mm-hmm.
I only looked around that area because at the time I still didn't know that Nick had found it.
Yeah.
And I was so obsessed with it where I was like, there is no way that I'm wrong about this clue. It is there. It's got to be there. And in retrospect, I should have looked back on it because I remember Nick said something to me where he was like, well, I feel like if it were here, it would just kind of be on top. Like it wouldn't be like buried because I was literally like digging And he's like, I feel like it'd be more obvious right. in retrospect. It's like, and you're already like, found it.
Nick, help me dig up the beach.
Yeah, and he was. And then he would be like, oh, let's not get too sketchy. Like, let's look somewhere else. But I was so frustrated because I spent all my time looking for the idol there. I wasn't looking with Christian. I was looking at the freaking palm tree, obsessing over it. I'm like, where Christian found it was on the opposite side of the island. Mm-hmm. So if I told Nick, I kind of like got mad at him afterwards, like in a joking way where I was like, dude, you should have just told me because I wasted, like we could have found the idol sooner. Like it was almost risky, right? Like what if a Goliath found the idol instead of us because we kept looking at the stupid palm tree. Mm-hmm. But it ended up being hilarious. And it was like when we had the David powwow that was like, we're going to tell each other all about the advantages. When Nick said, I found an advantage. And I said, where was it? And he said, it was at the palm tree. And I was just like, are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. Because it had been like such a point of obsession. Like it was so funny. It was like funny, but so not funny because I was like, dude, why didn't you tell me? And that was when it was really obvious that like Christian and I were at the bottom because he was like, oh, we were going to tell you, but the three of us hadn't decided if we were going to tell you two yet. And Christian and I were like, oh, okay, that's kind of weird, but okay.
Okay, so things are going to begin to swing in the favor of the Davids at this point. This is when John is going to go home. But I'm interested to hear this from your perspective in terms of what you knew about the vote and when you knew it.
Yeah, I think other people have said it already, and I did not know about the vote. And this was one of the harder sort of votes for me, like in the aftermath of it. It was probably one of my lows, which is funny because it's one of the times you don't see me crying and you don't see me. That was probably one of the lowest points in the game for me because I was like, oh my gosh, I knew the least amount of information. I knew less than all of the Davids. I knew less than all of the Goliaths. I was more blindsided than John. Mm-hmm. And that was like a huge ego check, a huge humbling experience where what I thought was happening at that time was I thought Angelina was going home. And I remember thinking, this is very fishy. Like, it's so weird that we've had two unanimous votes in a row because Elizabeth had been unanimous. And then like, supposedly everyone is voting for Angelina. I remember thinking like, this is weird. But of course, you've never played Survivor before, so you don't know like how it's supposed to go. Like we hadn't been at the merge before. So actually, it's funny. You were asking earlier, did I ever think of the season in a meta way where I was like, is this a good season? The only time I ever thought about something was I actually remember saying I was sitting in the hammock of doom, where you swing when you are overly confident and don't know what's happening. Swinging in the hammock of doom. And I said, is our season really boring? Like I was talking to somebody about the fact that the vote I thought was the vote was Angelina. And I was like, is our season boring? Like, I can't believe we're just like, you know, it's like unanimous again. How crazy. I'm like, no, little did I know it'd be one of the most crazy votes in Survivor history. And I'm the only idiot that didn't know it was happening. So it was frustrating because I actually was doing work. I mean, I never was passive in Survivor. And like, I remember talking to Angelina and she was like, oh, you know, acting, but now I know she's acting, but she's like, I know my name's on the chopping block, but like, what if I could get two more Goliaths? And like, I was like, yeah, go do it. But even though I didn't think she would, but I was hoping that like, maybe there would be a way that like they could split the vote, whatever. I like had all these ideas, right? My mind is going like a mile a minute, like trying to figure out how can we do this? Like, what can we do to strategize? The thing that was really hard and whatever, like it was hard working with the Davids and being now Elizabeth's gone. I'm the only female David left. And now knowing that like my name, they had kind of thrown me under the bus way back on the David beach. I didn't know. So like the mm-hmm. whole time, like me, Nick and Davey were best buds. Like I didn't know that they had thrown my name out there. It was frustrating seeing sort of how little they trusted me because I really did nothing to make them not trust me. And you do wonder if like gender or emotionality, sort of like my being neurotic, like what comes into play? Like, why didn't they trust me when I never did anything that would make them not trust me? And that's when I start to think like crying at the previous vote with Elizabeth was probably like not great for me. Like stuff like that where I'm like, yeah, if I had regrets, it would probably be that. But what would be frustrating would be that I would always want to talk strategy with them. I mean, and I think I'm a pretty like rational person, rational way that I think about things. So I'd be like, okay, guys, I just talked to Angelina. Like, this is what she said. Da-da-da. And they'd be like, Gabby, she's lying to you. Like, don't be stupid. Don't fall for it. And I'd be like, okay, well, little did I know, they know so much more information than me, but they're just not telling me. And then they're acting like I'm an idiot for not knowing.
Yeah.
So like, and so this happened again at like the Dan vote where, so I'm kind of jumping all over the place.
No, that's fine.
Before they revealed that they had these advantages, they would be like, I love them now, but like, I felt like they were a little condescending where they would be like, well, don't worry about it. Just do what we say. And I'd be like, well, I can count to five and I can count to six. And I know that there's more of them than there are of us. So I don't know why you're just telling me to like vote for this person without explaining, like, we're going to lose where we have less numbers than them. And it would be like, because they knew something that I didn't about the vote steal and I didn't. And then they would tell you and they'd be like, well, let me tell you why. We actually have a vote steal. And I'd be like, oh, well, now it makes sense. Well, like now I can count the same numbers that you're counting. So that was like the frustrating thing, was just that like they didn't feel like they could trust me or tell me or whatever for the John vote. They still needed me to vote for Angelina, which is totally fine. But I do think it was a mistake on their part to not just tell me, because even though, like, of course I had gotten emotional at the previous vote, honestly, I get emotional when I feel like I like don't have any control. Like I got so emotional at the Elizabeth thing because I knew Elizabeth was going home and I kind of was just like, whatever, like balls to the walls. Like, she's going home. I'm upset. I'm going to defend her. Whereas if I knew there was a very finicky plan in place, oh, trust that I could keep it secret. Yeah. Trust that I would not reveal it at tribal. And so like that was a little hurtful, just that they're like, well, we're just kind of whatever, let her vote for Angelina. Cause it was, I think it was hurtful to the David Alliance, because when I came back, I was like, I'm an idiot. I'm on the bottom. Nobody told me anything. Not only was I blindsided by what the Davids did, I was blindsided by what the Goliaths did. I was blindsided by Allison and people that had told me they were voting for Angelina and they were actually voting for Christian. And it was really hard. But the thing is, when I came back, I totally played like I was a good sport. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad that I'm on your guys' side. You guys are so smart and like to take care of me. I played up that role because I was like, whatever, obviously I'm playing with a bunch of people that like, you know, care about their ego. And like, to me, it was better. I was like, I'm going to stroke their ego and make them think they're awesome at the game, even though they just hurt me extremely much. And Davey told me, this is good on Davey's part, because I think Davey would not have played the idol on me if it had been me instead of Christian at that Dan vote. Mm-hmm. I mean, at that vote. But Davey pulled me aside immediately and said, I'm so sorry we didn't tell you. I would have played it on you if we found out it was you. I think that's not true, but like, great play on his part. And like, I was like, no worries. I'm so glad you have my back. So like I don't think they ever knew that I felt like I was on the bottom. At the same time, then when I talked to Allison and Allison apologized to me and said, hey, I'm sorry I lied to you. We were voting for Christian. I was hoping that we could still work together after I voted out Christian, but like, whatever. And it was an awkward thing where she was like, but by the way, did you notice that the Davids didn't tell you anything? Guess you're at the bottom of that alliance. And I was like, yeah, I know. So it's like, how can you blame me for like being close to Allison or feeling just about my position on the Davids when like you guys literally left me out of the vote?
Yeah, it's a weird situation because it's almost like in the way that you would lie to people that you're going to vote out, your allies were lying to you about the vote that was happening, and sort of in the same way that you would just sort of like give like a short answer, like, hey, don't worry about it, to a person that you were going to be blindsiding. You want to talk things through like you would with your allies, and they're sort of, brushing you off. And, you know, I totally understand why that would be frustrating.
Yeah. And that's like the same reason I was frustrated way back at the Jess vote, where like, I don't care. I mean, if people want to think I'm neurotic or I like to overthink things, whatever, I think it makes me an excellent alliance partner, because if you're my alliance partner, I'm going to talk through every possible scenario with you. And I'm going to talk through, I want to talk through what could happen. What if this person has an idol? What if we go to rocks? Like, whatever. The thing that was so frustrating about playing with some of the Davids was that they saw it as like, she's overthinking things. Probably Christian was the only one that really respected sort of like thinking through, okay, what could happen? Nick to an extent, Davey to an extent, Carl really got frustrated with it. Carl would say like, you're overthinking things. Your mind's going haywire. You're like, you're overthinking things. And I'd be like, no, that you have to think through things like this. So it was frustrating when people were like, well, just trust us, just do what I say. Another good example of that was actually at the Dan vote. Mm-hmm. We will eventually find out that the Davids have the idol nullifier and the vote steal. Well, at the time we woke up and we were kind of like, okay, I think Alec and Dan were the ones that we had talked about. We're like, we should get these people out next if we can, because they were huge challenge threats. We had suspected that Dan had a second idol. Carl starts talking about, in front of people, in front of Kara, in front of like Goliath that shouldn't know, he's like, we need to get Dan out. We're going to vote for Dan. And I remember pulling him aside privately and I'm like, hey, we're scared Dan has an idol. So like, don't tell them that we're voting for Dan, because Dan's going to play his idol. And I said, well, what are you doing? Is it strategy? Are you actually saying we're going to vote for Dan so that Dan plays his idol, and secretly we'll actually vote for somebody else? Because if so, that's genius. And Carl would say, no. Yeah, we think Dan has an idol and we're also going to vote for him. Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, oh, wait, what? Be like, don't worry about it. Just vote for Dan.
And you didn't know about the idol nullifier yet at this point.
I didn't know about the idol nullifier. He'd be like, just vote for Dan. Don't worry about it. And I'd be like, I don't know. I don't really want to do that, because Dan has an idol. That doesn't seem to make sense. And it would be like, he would just say, trust me. Just trust me. And I'd be like, do trust you, but like the logic isn't making sense. Mm-hmm. And that's when he would say, Gabby, you're overthinking things. I'm like, I promise you, I am not overthinking. I am just counting on one hand, right, and this will not work. And then it was like, Carl actually told me about the idol nullifier before the sort of David reveal, because I went to the water well with him, and he was like, oh, I remember it bright as day, because it was one of the coolest moments of the game to me. So what's funny is everyone, like, I think people think Carl and I like have this crazy relationship. Carl and I were actually very close. But Carl goes, I'm fixing to tell you something. And I'm like, oh my God, what? And he's like, I have an idol nullifier. He describes the whole thing to me. I ask him like 101 questions, because I'm a huge Survivor nerd. And I'm like, what? This has never happened before. Like, how did you find it? He described to me like the whole coconut scene. It was hilarious. He told me, you know, exactly how he would play it. Like, I play it after the whatever. So like, I totally believed him that it existed. But it was the kind of thing where it's like, well, now I get it. Well, now your strategy makes sense. But like, don't go, you know, saying that I'm overthinking things just because like I didn't have all the information you had. But so that was like the craziest thing about working with the Davids. Mm-hmm. Like, they would know things that I didn't know, and they'd be like, God, Gabby, like, don't overthink things. And I'd be like, I'm not. I'm just counting 2-5, and I don't think that this makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, then they would like reveal something crazy, like, well, actually, we have a vote steal. And I'd be like, well, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Wish you would have told me that. Like, meanwhile, Christian and I are sitting here going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, they have 7. How the hell is that gonna work? So it's like, they would like, I feel like they sometimes thought me and Christian were stupid. And really, it was just like, no, we can just count to the number 6.
Did you get completely filled in before the Dan vote with the idol nullifier? Was there anything that surprised you on that vote?
No, that I knew. And I know Nick talked about it. Nick and I had some other ideas about maybe we should play it on somebody else. Or like, don't play the nullifier, play the split vote on somebody else, do a switcheroo, vote at somebody else. Like, we had really cool ideas, because Nick and I actually felt like we saw that vote very similarly. But in the end, you know, it was Carl's decision. He had the idol nullifier. He wanted it to be a sure thing. So it was, but I knew about that. And actually, I felt like Christian and I put a lot of work in on that vote. So what had happened was, you saw sort of the plan where like Kara's like, I'm ready to flip on Dan. And you saw, like, we talked about a split vote, and then eventually the two Goliaths, it would have been 3 maybe if Allison had not gotten her vote stolen, that voted for Angelina, right? Mm-hmm. Well, the contentious thing was, were they always going to vote for Angelina, or did they only vote for Angelina because they got spooked by the vote steal? And that actually kind of had caused a rift between the Davids, because I maybe was a little too trusting of Allison and Kara, which now I watched the episode and I think I was too trusting, because they were just going to stick Goliath strong. I thought that they really were going to vote for Angelina. But I felt like it was Christian and I that put in a lot of work, where we knew it was locked. We were getting rid of Dan. Like, it was foolproof. If the 5 of us voted for Dan and we played the idol nullifier and the vote steal, so there's 6 votes for Dan, like, Dan was going home. It's like the most sure I've ever been going into tribal council. The cool thing that Christian and I were kind of geeking out about was, what else can we do? We know Dan's going home. Can we find more ways to fracture the Goliaths along the way?
Mm-hmm.
The way that we came up with to do that was to have them vote for Angelina. So that, you know, then they would come back and be like, well, now the Goliaths are super fractured because they voted against each other. And it was like, it was just the craziest thing where it was like the Goliaths had originally pitched to us like, well, why don't we split it 4-4? Like, four of you vote for Dan and four of you vote for Angelina. And we're like, that's so stupid. Like, why would we tie? Like, why would we give you up a number? It was just like they were totally lying to us right now. Like, in retrospect, I'm like, yeah, they were lying. But Christian and I felt like we're the ones where we were like, oh, here's an idea. Why don't you guys vote for Angelina? And evidently, according to the episode, they were not going to do that. They were just going to vote for Christian, and they only changed their minds because of the vote steal. But it was a really cool tribal council, actually, where I felt like I kind of wish it like showed on TV, because in terms of back to what we were saying about like jury management, sort of how you come across like with the audience and the jury. I remember that vote when Nick announced that he was stealing the vote. Alec, Allison, and Kira freaked out.
Mm-hmm.
Started like whispering to each other. They're like, oh my God, what do we do? And I remember Christian turned around to Allison and said, insurance. Like a badass thing to say. He's like, it's just insurance. And I said to Kara, I said, vote for who we told you to vote for. Mm-hmm. Which was Angelina. But it was like, oh my God, maybe we became too Goliath-y in the moment. But like, we felt so powerful because they were freaking out. And we were like, just do it. Stick to the plan. Keith Nail. Do what we said. And like, it was just like, they were totally flailing. So that was such a fun vote.
So the good news is, yeah, that does work out where those guys cast votes against Angelina. But I guess what you would not have predicted was that Angelina ends up being somebody who becomes taken in by the Davids. And at least mm-hmm. from what it looks like on the episode, she starts being groomed to be your replacement in the Davids Alliance.
She totally was. And I claimed it. I mean, I called it. I knew that was happening in the moment. I remember having interviews where I talked about it. I was like, yep, she's replaced me. It was totally a fact. It was a thing that happened. The thing that really hurt the Davids, and I'm sorry, like, people who think that whatever, like, me turning on Carl was the beginning of the downfall for the Davids. No, the beginning of the downfall was that we were never that unified to begin with. The beginning of the downfall was that we had to stick together out of survival. We had that awesome moment where it was like the David Five. We were really close. I will, like, we had an amazing camaraderie. They left me out of the John boat. And then mm-hmm. you have here, people just naturally have affinity with certain people. So like, I had a natural affinity with Allison and Kara. Nick and Davey had a natural affinity with Angelina. Mm-hmm. Carl had an affinity with Angelina. Christian had more of an affinity with Allison. So my point is, now we fractured the Goliaths. Good for us, right? Well, no, because the Davids all wanted to work with different Goliaths. So like, you hear Carl saying, well, Gabby's too close to Allison. Well, I'm sorry. How does that make sense? Why is it like I'm too close to Allison? Why isn't it like you're too close to Angelina or you're too close to Kara, which he was.
Mm-hmm.
So like, that was the thing that hurt us was actually, and I think Nick's steal a vote actually hurt us in a way, because part of the whole thing had been, we need to test them. We told them to vote for Angelina. We need to test if they were really going to vote for Angelina. The problem was, it was so hard to tell afterwards whether they had voted for her because they wanted to or because they got spooked by the vote steal. So there was never any proof. And then we took different sides. So like, Nick was like, they're lying to us. Like, they were going to vote out Christian. And then I'm like, I don't know. I believe Allison and Kara. Obviously I was wrong. Point is, we took different sides. So like, we were not cohesive after that. And Angelina definitely took my place. I got closer with Allison and Kara, and then you see Nick getting closer with Angelina. And it's like, that's a shame because we did so much work to fracture them, but then we kind of like picked different sides of the civil war, so to speak.
So at this point, this is when you guys go on the reward with the wraps. Is that right?
Oh God. Yes.
Did you get sick also?
Poisonous wraps.
Did you get sick?
No, I didn't. How crazy was that though? And it was like, I remember, oh my gosh, Mike would do the funniest thing. Mike would like make up catchphrases for people. And he would be like, after the season, I'm going to make a t-shirt for you. And Allison, poor Allison, she was so sick, she was vomiting, and Mike would tease her that she would be vomiting, and she would say, "I'm vomiting, I'm vomiting." And Mike was like, "That's going to be on your t-shirt. Your t-shirt's going to say, 'I'm vomiting, I'm vomiting.'" And like, my t-shirt was like, "I don't believe anything anybody says," because he was like, apparently after the Strike Force, I was like, "Well, it was never a real alliance, was it? Was it, Mike? Like, I don't believe anything anybody says." And he was like, "That's your slogan, Gabby. Like, that's going on your t-shirt." And like, he had all these slogans for people. Yeah,
he's like the new Johnny Fairplay.
Right? Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh my comment. Yeah. So Allison's was, "I'm vomiting." I don't know why she got so sick, but the rats. Oh my God.
Maybe it was the hey, nobody's vomiting from the rehabs. Was it one specific rap? Like, was there one that they ate?
Allison drank like probably like 3 metric tons of juice. There was like wine and juice, and Allison was like, "I don't really drink alcohol that often." So like, Alec and I were like chugging like rosé, and Mike and Christian a little bit, and then Allison was like, "I'm gonna drink 5 bottles of pineapple juice." So like, I was like, maybe it's like too much acid, but she's a doctor. She was like, she just got sick. Mm-hmm. Like, she got a bug. But by the way, like, why did we get wraps? This is the thing. Like, how much we talked about like pizza. Okay. We got the pizza reward. We got burgers. I would always talk about fried chicken and biscuits. They eventually got that. I'm like, who was talking about wraps around camp? I want to have a word with them. Like, was Californians? Was it the vegans? Was it the vegetarians? We had 2 vegetarians. Angeline is vegetarian. Mike is vegan. I want to know if they're responsible for talking about wraps. Like, who is on Survivor talking about, if I could really have something right now, it would be a dry tortilla around some cheese,
you had pizza,
and ham.
You had the Bula Burger Bar. I mean, what else is left? It's sort of like you work in an office. It's like, all right, what should we get today? Pizza? No, we got that already. We got burgers. I mean,
we could have had spaghetti. We could have had some
Italian,
some Italian, some osso buco. I don't know. I could have had something. We could have ravioli.
All right. So at the point where then Alec's name is getting floated around and Carl is telling the various Goliaths about the plan, I mean, the genesis of the Carl boot, is it happening here in this vote, or it doesn't ever start to get talked about until the round where Carl ultimately goes home?
It is talked about, the Alec vote. And so I talk about this in my interview that I did with Josh Wiggler for THR. Mm-hmm. And it's the weirdest thing, because in Survivor, you feel like a votes change so quickly and like plans never stay in place. Somehow Christian and I both were like feeling sort of like this, we got to get rid of Carl soon. Way back at the Alec vote, we ultimately decided not to do so because we didn't want to give the Goliaths the majority. So when we ultimately ended up taking Carl out, we didn't give the Goliaths the majority. We just tied it. So it was like 4 Goliaths, 4 Davids. So that was purposeful, because we didn't want to give them the majority back. But I mean, Carl was becoming increasingly a problem. The Godfather was like an easy thing to describe it with, but really it was more the stuff I was describing before, where it was like, I love him to death. I found it really hard to strategize with him because we saw the game so differently. He would say, "I'm overthinking things." He would say, "My mind is going crazy." When really it's like, I just wanted to think two votes ahead. Like, I just wanted to like talk about what ifs. And he would just be, he was such a straightforward guy. So it was hard to strategize with him in a way. And then also he was very much for David Strong. And I know some of the fans are frustrated because they love the David Five. They love that moment where we sort of get together. By the way, when we got together, I remember saying, it was funny because I listened to you and Steven talk on the Know-It-Alls about, I actually said, I feel like we're like those guys on Captain Planet. We're like in our rings. And I said, and I'm the heart ring. I'm like, all of you guys have cool powers. And I'm just like, heart. But I think, you know, all the fans were rooting for the David Five. David Five would not have worked for me and Christian. Mm-hmm. It really would have. And I know it's frustrating for the fans to say, we threw away the majority, we threw away whatever. I know Nick is still frustrated about it. It's something we will never agree on. look at Carl's exit interviews. He said he would have gone for me and Christian next. Like, mm-hmm. the three of them were much closer than me and Christian. This is already evidenced by them knowing about the vote steal, them knowing about like all these things, and them being like, oh, well, we were waiting to tell you guys until we all three could talk and decide whether we should tell you about the vote steal. It's like, that's a huge red flag for me and Christian, where we're like, oh, we're being handed down things. We are at the bottom of this. So like going to the final five, okay, I would have come in fifth place instead of eighth place. Like, good for me. I really went out there wanting to win. I know that might be like crazy to some people, but mm-hmm. I wanted to win. I didn't want to be fifth and just like ride this David Alliance and like, whatever. It's an awesome alliance. It's the cutest alliance ever. I love our t-shirts. Shout out Eric Reichenbach at Dabo Doodles. Cutest t-shirt ever of us with the Davids, like strike, whatever, not Strike Force. I shouldn't reuse that name.
Yeah.
The Davids, like Avengers or whatever we are, like, best alliance ever, except for if you're at the bottom of it. So I just wasn't going to stay in it. Okay. Like, it didn't make sense for me.
All right, we'll get to the Godfather, Carl, next. But in terms of the Alec vote, was there any thought in hindsight, should you guys have kept Alec around? Could he have been a cog in what you wanted to do?
He could have been. The thing is, I don't know who else it would have been. It could have been Kara.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, everyone wanted Alec gone. Like, it was one of those rare circumstances where almost everyone agreed. So then do you really want to stick your neck out and look stupid for being like if I think Christian and I could have like rallied the numbers, right, to vote for somebody else. We basically could have done like the Carl thing at that vote instead, or we could have like, maybe we could have gotten a different Goliath out. Like, but the thing is, then when you come home, the thing is, if you make a big move, when you come home, you've got to be able to justify it. You've got to be able to say, look, I'm sorry, but Carl was the Godfather. Or look, I'm sorry, but Alec was way too good in challenges. Look, I'm sorry, but John is the president of the Brochachos. He's way too strong. We couldn't play with him. It always has to be justifiable. You don't want to come home and have it be like, I don't know, I felt like it. With Alec, I felt like if we voted for somebody else instead of Alec, everyone would have been like, why did you do that? Why did you do that? We had the chance to take out Alec. It's like Joey Amazing. It was like when Joey Amazing fell down at that challenge in Cambodia where he literally passed out. And like, it was kind of like, oh, this is awkward. Like, do we take him out when he literally like almost passed out? That actually happened to us. Like when Alec fell down after the 6-hour challenge, like, you know, medical checked on him. It was intense, man. Like, we'd been out there for 6 hours.
So there was some thought of keeping him around because he was in a diminished condition?
Not that necessarily, but just sort of like the gravitas of the challenge. It was such a bonding experience. And it was kind of this like icky feeling where you're like, oh God, I know you just stood up there for 6 hours, but we're going to vote you out anyway. It's like, that's how I feel. Like, I remember the Joey Amazing vote going with that, where they were like, oh, like, how could you vote somebody out that's how he felt at least. Like, he's like, mm-hmm. You think that you would give someone a little leeway, but it's actually like, you look really stupid if you don't vote that person out then. Because
mm-hmm.
like, holy crap, that person just stood up there for 6 hours. Imagine what else he could do. We have to take the chance now. And it would sort of be like, it's like a waste. Like, if Christian stood up there for 6 hours to beat Alec, it's like such a waste of that if we don't vote out Alec. But yeah, certainly, like, perhaps we could have thought about something else. But I think the thing about Survivor is, like, do you want to stick out your neck for somebody? And, like, was Alec somebody that it was worth sticking your neck out for? I don't think so, because he was such a challenger. And he was a social threat, too. He was really likable.
Okay. All right. So here we go. Big move number one coming here. Going to vote out Godfather Carl. And this was, you know, your signature move in the game.
Oh, my gosh. You know, it was so cool to watch it back. And I think it was just cool to see it. I think I got a lot of narration in that episode. I got a lot of chance to explain my thought process in the game. I really did see it as my move. And I don't want to take anything away from Christian or Allison or even Mike, who obviously had key roles to play in that. Of course, everyone is the hero of their own story. To me, that was my move. So how lucky am I that the episode is sort of presented in that way? But it's funny, that move was like talked about for a long time after, including at Final Tribal, where people were still arguing about whose move it was. Mm-hmm. Like, I think at Final Tribal, Angelina said something like, oh, like when Allison made that move to vote out Carl, and Christian said, Christian's on the jury, and Christian's saying, I saw that as my move. And I'm like, I saw that as my move. We're still like arguing amongst ourselves, like even though the game is over. So my point with saying this is, I think it was a great move for me. The crazy thing about the game, and this is where like perception is reality in Survivor, is I don't think people in the game saw it as my move. Mm-hmm. And that was extremely frustrating for me. And I think that was the precursor to me going a little bit cray cray at the final eight and trying to get Christian out, because I was like, why isn't anyone giving me credit? So we can talk about kind of both of them, but that it was a crazy thing to see it show on TV and be like, okay, yeah, there's my rationale. That makes sense. Cause in the game, I don't think anybody like really saw it as my move.
What was kind of confusing to me about it after the fact was that I felt like, okay, you guys made this move to take out Carl, but then it didn't seem like that there was any cohesion between that five to make the next move going forward. It was sort of like the Carl move happened, but then Christian was talking to Nick. Oh no, we're still good. Then you ended up setting your sights on Christian. Was there any momentum after that blindside for that group to stick together for another vote?
I don't think that there was. And so my mistake was that because of that, I thought that we had moved into this portion of the game. Dude, our game was so like fast paced that I thought we were like in voting blocks. So this is why like it's frustrating when people are like, well, Gabby and Christian caused the downfall of the Davids, because look at all the Davids got picked off right after Carl. Because to me, I didn't see it as David versus Goliath anymore. I really saw it as voting blocks. And maybe that was stupid of me, because of course the Goliaths maybe were still playing more Goliath strong. So for me, I was like, okay, that five we just voted for, that was like a utility to vote out Carl. And now I'm going to use whatever utility I can to vote out whoever needs to go home next. Like, I'm like, ooh, I'm feeling the end of the game creeping up on me. So I didn't think that five was totally going to stick together. They might have. So I'm kind of jumping all over the place, but like the crazy thing is at the final eight, when I end up targeting Christian and ultimately I end up going home, I think if I would have done nothing, both Christian and I would have been safe. The two names that had been thrown out at the final eight were Allison and Davey, mm-hmm. which weren't shown in the episode. Allison a little bit, right? But like Allison and Kara and like sort of that contingent wanted to take out Davey. Davey and Nick wanted to take out Allison. And like Christian and I were kind of in the middle. And like, I think I kind of screwed it up by being like, I want to do something totally different. So I forget where I was going with this, but just that I don't know. I don't know that five would have stuck together. I have no idea what it was. This is the problem with the Davids, and maybe like with the fluid and fast nature of our game in particular, mm-hmm. with the season, was that I feel like people didn't get on the same page. So it's like I said, after we picked apart Dan, the Davids didn't get on the same page of like, okay, going forward, we're going to work with Angelina, or like going forward, we're going to work with Allison. It was like half of the Davids wanted to work with Angelina. I wanted to work with Allison. So it was like kind of the same thing where it's like, okay, we're going to do this awesome thing to get rid of Carl. And we hadn't like discussed what would happen next.
Mm-hmm.
It's like everybody just had different agendas.
Yeah. Do you feel like that had you gotten more credit for the Carl vote, would you have then immediately gone with the Christian vote next?
No, I don't think so. And I think this is like, these are the intangible things about Survivor that are so hard to portray. And like on the episode, you have to, they portrayed it in a certain way, right? Where I'm like, I noticed that Christian has been protecting me the whole game. So like, I have to get rid of him. It was that. And it was a combination of things too, where it was like, after we got back from the Carl vote, a bunch of people pulled Christian aside. Nick pulled Christian aside, which you see in the episode, him saying, him getting kind of mad at him. No one pulled me aside. I was literally sitting by the campfire, like, doo, doo, doo. Everyone was like pulling each other aside, like, oh my God, that was a huge move. No one pulled me aside. And to be frank, it hurt my ego. Mm-hmm. I was like, I just made a huge move. Like, does no one see that I made a move? And to me, it was a sign that like people saw me as just like Christian's plus one and Christian's you know, extra vote. So like Nick is confronting Christian saying, how could you do this? And it, to me, it was like, I was Christian's extra number rather than I made a move and like I had the social bonds to work with Allison and Christian, or like, you know, Allison might say the same thing. She might say, I had the social bonds to work with Christian and Gabby. Everyone sees it from their perspective. And like what I should have done was see it as, look, it's great if someone else is taking the heat and if someone else is taking the blame, freaking roll with it. But we were so late in the game. We're at day 30. There's only a week left in the game, you know, 8-9 days. And I'm fearing that if I'm not getting credit now, how can I expect to get credit in the final tribal council? How can I expect to be sitting there with only 3 people left only 8 days from now and say, hey, you know, when you all thought I was just like riding Christian's coattails, actually, it was my move. Like, no one's going to believe me. You can't change people's mind at final tribal. I don't think.
Yeah.
I don't think you can change people's mind at final tribal. So that was, I do think like me not getting credit did like kind of set me off where I went a little crazy and I'm like, I need things on my resume, which like I hate, like, but I'm just such a Survivor fan that I was like, I hated not getting credit for something that I saw as a move.
Had you had any thoughts about voting out Christian before you got to that round, or was that as it was presented on the show coming out of the family visit that you just sort of like this light bulb went off and then you went to work?
I knew I would have to do it eventually. I didn't know when. I figured I would have to do it at either 5, 6, or 7.
Mm-hmm.
Ideally not 5, because 5 is the last time you can play an idol. So I want to talk about something, actually. I want to talk about how I think Christian became a huge target in my eyes because he had an idol. And one thing that I don't like about modern Survivor is like how an idol kind of makes you immune for like more than the idol is worth. So like seemingly forever, right? Because we know that the idol, like you can play an idol until the final 5. Sometimes, like, psychologically, I feel like that almost makes the person safe until the final 5.
Mm-hmm.
Does that translate to you?
Well, let me hear your thought on it, and then I can weigh in.
I think it's because people are scared to go after someone with an idol.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's almost like an idol almost acts like a super idol if people know that you have it. Because then people are like, well, what if he plays it? Or, like, so it's like, people didn't vote for Tony and Kagayan because they were scared of his idol. So he was like safe almost. It's almost like you have immunity because people like know that you could play your idol. So people don't want to vote for you. People don't want to waste their vote on you knowing that you could play an idol.
Mm-hmm.
So like if you know that an idol lasts until final 5, I feel like it's like psychologically people are like, oh, we can't go after them until final 5 or like final. So it's like, how do you do it? You have to flush an idol. So psychologically, I didn't like the fact of being like, well, it's too early to go after Christian because he has an idol. I'm like, well, then when is the right time? Is it the final 7? Is it the final 6? Is it the final 5? Final 5 is too late because he has an idol. So he's for sure going to play it at the final 5. Okay, so let's bump it to final 6. Well, let's assume that he wins 1 immunity. Okay, so let's bump it to final 7. Well, he's expecting it at final 7. So let's bump it up one more. And he said in his interviews, he's like, I didn't expect Gabby to come after me at 8. That's exactly the reason I came after him at 8. I wanted to totally blindside him with an idol in his pocket. Maybe because like I didn't want to deal with the whole rigmarole of like,
that's a good word.
We're going to on this vote, we're going to flush it. And then on the next vote, we got to hope that he doesn't win immunity. And then we got to vote for him. It's like, there's too many like steps. Like when somebody has an idol, right? It's like, you have to do all this like kind of subtraction working backwards from the final 5. And then I feel like an idol makes people immune for longer than the idol is actually good for. If that makes sense. Like an idol only makes you immune for 1 vote, right? Correct. Like by the rules of the idol,
right?
Like you can only play it once. You play it, it's gone. But like psychologically, I feel like it makes you safer for longer if people know you have it because they're like, oh, well, we don't want to vote for him.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the thing is I was like, screw that. Like I was like, screw that assumption. I don't want to just like go by like the rules. Like I'm like, that sucks. Like I don't want to wait till the final 5 to target him. So in retrospect, I kind of wish like I had tried to flush his idol rather than go for him. But at the same time, I just like thought it would be cool.
So if you had to do it over again, and I think you've publicly stated that you would still, you stand by the move, you stand by the decision, how would you have handled it differently?
I think, I stand by the move, like the thing that I had to get rid of Christian. What I would have done differently, maybe I should have just pitched to Nick and Davey. What it was, I trusted Nick and Davey too much.
Mm-hmm.
I had just blindsided them and I foolishly thought that they would be willing to vote with me in a way that was on purpose. In a way, it was like, I know I just blindsided you. Let's rebuild trust right now by doing something together. I underestimated sort of like, you know, the emotions and the social capital part of the game. It's funny because people think I'm really emotional. I actually think I'm a really rational player to the extent of like, I assumed that everyone would do what I saw was the most rational move, even if it like didn't make sense. Like, even if emotionally they didn't feel bonded to me.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Like, it's like I underestimated how I had lost their trust. I just thought it was like, oh, let's just skim over that, you guys. Because like David would always have these little speeches when we got back to camp where he would say, it's season 37, guys, like big moves, like whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, Davey will get it. Like, Davey won't hold it against me. And I think I actually underestimated that they actually were kind of hurt by me blindsiding them and that they didn't trust me. So it's funny that people think I'm emotional, but it's like, I really wanted to be almost clinical about it, where it was like, look, I know he's my ally, but we got to take him out. And I wanted to be clinical about it, but like other people have feelings and other people have a say in things. And I totally misread that. And like, people are not chess players. And I shouldn't have expected that two people that I just blindsided wanted to work with me. But maybe it could have turned out differently if I would have said, let's just flush his idol and let's vote for Allison, because Allison was probably the target at that vote. So like, I don't know. It could have just been like, I should have kept my mouth shut and like gone for him and like waited for someone else to bring him up, because Christian was almost always a target.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Obviously, it was the end of me.
Yeah. How late in the game did you tell Nick and Davey about your plan? Was it the day of tribal council? Was it the day before the tribal council?
That I actually think was my mistake. I told them way too early. I told them after the reward. So mm-hmm. there was like another day.
Yeah.
Like, so it's like the reward and then the next day is immunity.
Too much time for these survivors is bad. Yeah.
I know. And I do regret that. I think I just got kind of like antsy, or like, you know, they were on the reward and it was like, what were we doing? We were sitting around talking. The thing is, like, I think if I ever played again, like, it would be like, I need to let the game come to me and I need to not I think I was getting insecure and I was like, I need to do something. Like, this is like, nobody's giving me credit. And like, that's stupid. Like, that's just like me, like, getting insecure, you know?
Yeah.
But like, one of the things was, oh my gosh, Christian was so good at the game. Honestly, I just want to give him props right here and say, like, he played an amazing social game. And I think it's hard for people who are watching the show to understand, because like, he came in seventh place, which like, maybe you're thinking like, that's not that far, given it's 35 out of 39 days. But like, people are like, well, why was he a target so much if it was a good social game? What I mean by good social game is like, he was just so likable. He was good at talking to people. And like, one of the things that triggered me into wanting to target him was, so me, Kara, Allison, and Christian were the losers of the family reward. And we are at the beach and I know Christian as an idol. And so we're like talking about, what should we do? They want to vote out Davey. The two girls want to vote out Davey. And meanwhile, keep in mind that the Davids had want to vote out Allison. So to me, it's like a war between these two at the time. And Kara says, and let me tell you something. Davey told me that he knows something about the idol, where mm-hmm. the idol, and he's going to tell me soon, like after the next vote. And so Christian and I kind of look at each other like, crap, that's Christian. So like, AKA Davey's going to tell Kara that Christian has the idol. Christian like comes up with this kind of like genius, like backwards logic plan where he's like, well, what if Davey has the idol and he's going to plant in your head that someone else has the idol? Like, he could totally claim that me or Gabby has the idol. And how crazy would that be? Mm-hmm. So it's like Christian has the idol and Christian's saying, oh my God, Davey's a genius and Davey's going to lie to you and tell you that I have the idol. So he's like proactively pretending mm-hmm. himself against Davey telling Kara that he is the idol, right?
Smart.
Does that make
sense? Yeah. Smart.
And I'm like sitting there watching, I'm thinking, oh my God, I am watching Christian win the game right now. Like, he is just so smart. He just thinks of all these little things. And so that's why I sat down with Karen and Allison. I literally said that. I said, you guys, I didn't tell them that he had the idol, but I just said, you guys, can't you tell? I like the way Christian talks. He's so good at talking. Like, he's going to, I was like, he's winning the game. Like, he's winning the game. Mm-hmm. So it was something like, I was always hyper aware that we had to get rid of Christian, but, yeah, I mean, maybe it was one vote too early. Like, I think that it's so hard to know. Maybe I should have just tried to flush his idol. Maybe I should have. Who knows?
Yeah, I really like that idea in sort of talking this through, of that you do the same exact thing you did, but you know, the vote is still, you still vote out Allison, but you go to Nick and Davey like, hey, you guys want to work with me on let's flush Christian's idol tonight. And then, I mean, what could they do to you then? I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I think that would have been the best move. I think the thing that I think the too much time really hurt me, because what it was, so let me just clarify, because I think one of the criticisms I got was people were like, well, why didn't she have a plan B? Like, well, how stupid is it to vote for somebody with an idol? People, the plan B was Allison.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to understand that before we went on the reward, Nick and Davey were like, we're voting out Allison. Like, she's got to go. She survived for too long. We're voting her out. I was like, yeah, I'm ready to cut ties with her. Like, I know she's my close friend from TiVa, but I'm ready to cut ties with her. Like, I'm all like David Strong now, like whatever, like Carl's gone. The Davids are going to stick together. So when I pitched the Christian idea to Nick and Davey, I said, I know you guys want Allison out. It's still like, let everybody else vote for Allison. Like, let Mike and Angelina vote for Allison. And only we will be the only ones that know that Christian has an idol and we're voting for Christian. And if Christian plays an idol, Allison will go home. And what I actually pitched to Nick and Davey was, I was like, we're the only ones that know Christian has an idol. If Christian goes home with an idol in his pocket, us three will wake up at the break of dawn tomorrow and go find the next one. Little did I know, I did not know that Nick already had one. I didn't know there were two idols in play. So like, I was pitching to them where I was like, Davey, you're so good at finding idols. Like, we're going to find it. Like, it's better it's in our pocket and the Goliaths have no idea where it is, etc. So like, I thought that I was making a really logical pitch where I was like, you guys want Allison gone? Allison's gone. Like, totally. I'm ready to cut ties with her. Like, let me prove that, you know, I'm not as tied to her as you guys think I am. I had no idea that Nick would tell Mike and Angelina. I just saw like no sense in mm-hmm. that. And now I understand why he did it. Like, I've heard him explain it. Like, I think it's a good move on his part. But like, to me, that made no sense. Like, I told him, like, I'm like, don't tell Nick, don't tell Davey and who am I talking about? Don't tell Angelina. Like, let them continue to vote for Allison, and then it's a win-win.
Mm-hmm.
So just wanted to clarify that.
What was going to be your next move if you ended up getting Christian at that vote?
Who were
you going to work with?
I think this was my problem. I just got so excited. I just really like, I felt the end of the game coming up. I think one thing that's hard to grasp when you're watching the TV show is, on the TV show, you're like, well, there's two more episodes left. There's eight more people left. There's five more votes left. In the game, I was like, oh my God, there's only 7 days left. Literally, like, the numerical amount of time, like 7 days, 1 week. I was like, oh my God, that's so soon.
Mm-hmm.
Where I was like, I saw that there were a few threats ahead of me. The people that people always talked about were Allison, Davey, and Christian. And so we're at 8. And the final vote now is at the final 5.
Right.
I'm like, that's 3 people. Final 5's the last vote. I was like, I just thought that the end of the game would become so chaotic and be like voting blocks that it almost didn't matter who I voted with. It would just be like, well, now Allison's a threat, we'll get Allison out. Well, now Davey's a threat, we'll get Davey out. Well, now Nick's a threat, we'll get Nick out. Like, I just thought that it would be this kind of like meta thing. Totally my fault. That was not what the game was. I should not have underestimated that the Goliaths, I think the Goliaths were still playing David versus Goliath. I really think that they were. And in a way, I do kind of ding Nick and Davey for, okay, this is gonna sound hard to explain, okay? Because I'm going to sound like a hypocrite.
Hey, try me.
Okay, so obviously, like, I targeted Christian at the final eight. So people are frustrated because people are like, she's, like, getting rid of the David numbers. You know, the Davids had the majority. I didn't see it as a David versus Goliath game anymore. However, I think that, like, Nick assuring that a David went home by targeting me instead of Allison was very dangerous because, in retrospect, the Goliaths did not want to sit next to a David in the end. So I guess what I'm saying is I was willing to give up a David number, but it was a specific David. It was Christian who was the biggest threat to win the game. Mm-hmm. It was a David number like me. Like, I'm sorry, I wasn't a threat at that time. Like, I really wasn't. So to me, like, Nick is really lucky that he won a bunch of immunities at the end, because if I were Goliath, I would not sit next to a David at the end. I think that they would have picked off the Davids one by one by one. Mm-hmm. This is where I'm scared I might lose people, because it's like, well, you're being a hypocrite because you tried to take Christian out. But my point is, I think that by Nick targeting me instead of allowing it to just be Allison. So I think by Nick throwing me out there instead of letting Allison be the minority vote and getting taken out by the idol, he almost sealed sort of the, like, David picking off. Mm-hmm. And people might argue that it was the Carl one that set it off, and it might be. I don't necessarily think that it was a domino effect like that, because at the final eight, when I got voted out, I think that there were other options. Like I said, I think Allison was brought up as an option, and Davey was brought up as an option. I honestly think if no action had been taken, Allison would have gone home. Mm-hmm. My point is, I don't feel like it was ever, like, an inevitable, like, doot, doot, doot. So when people criticize me and Christian for the Carl move, I think it's a little bit results oriented, where it's like, well, the Carl move was terrible because look at what happened, that Gabby and Christian got picked off right after. That's results oriented. If you look at it, actually, there were many other names that could have come up instead of us. So I don't think it was, like, an inevitable downfall that, like, we couldn't avoid. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think that Nick did have a couple of outs here, to use a poker term. I mean, he did have the Jubeni thing, which ultimately did end up working. Even if he didn't end up winning the immunities, I guess there's the possibility that the Jubeni thing could have played out in his favor.
It could be. Allison was talked about as a threat, but I don't know. I mean, I really don't know. I think maybe the Goliaths would have stuck together. And I'm not blaming him at all. Obviously, like, how can I blame him when his strategy worked and he won? But, like, I do think that it was, I mean, as much as, like, I'm a hypocrite because I tried to get rid of David. Mm. But I think that, like, by ensuring that it was a David that went home, it's a little bit sketchy, where it's like, how could he be surprised that Davey got taken out when Davey got taken out? Like, he was totally blindsided, but, like, he kind of set himself up to be in that position. Mm-hmm. He could have taken out Allison at the point when I went home and at the point when Christian went home, and he chose me and Christian instead. So, like, you can't blame me and Christian for destroying the Davids when other people had, you know, had some say in destroying the Davids as well.
Okay. Now, you end up going out of the game here. You go to the jury, but even though you say that Nick was the person that you think that maybe he made a bad move here to vote you out, you still voted for Nick over Mike and Angelina to win the game. Why did you feel like that Nick was the best of those three options?
It was such a hard decision, as evidenced by me crying in the voting booth as a jury member. I was so conflicted. I really was. I can kind of go through the reasons for both. So ultimately, why I ended up voting for Nick, it felt like he played a well-rounded game. I felt like if we're going by the new jury format, where it's like outwit, outlast, outplay, he had, or at least whatever the order of it, outwit, outplay, outlast. He had good points in all of them. It was a very hard final tribal because I felt like Nick had a strong early merge and then he got blindsided and didn't have much power at the end. Mike had the opposite. And I had a personal relationship with Nick and less so with Mike. And as a jury member, I feel that that is my prerogative to vote for, not like vote for my friend just because they're my friend, but like that social game, you know, if I feel like at the end of my 32 days out there that I know somebody better than I know somebody else, I bonded with them. That's a totally valid reason to vote for somebody. Like I now having played, I understand how social, quote unquote, social winners win. Mm-hmm. Like I understand how the Natalie Whites and the Michelle Fitzgeralds of the world win. Mm-hmm. Played because it's like it's just this intangible thing where it's like you don't know what it's like to live out there like with somebody, and it's like you're giving away $1 million. And I think Nick played an excellent game, and actually one of the big things that I asked about at Final Tribal was a little self-indulgent, but I was like, who was in charge of me going home? Mm-hmm. And it was Nick. And I gave him props for that in the sense that like I didn't want to be a bitter juror. And his reasoning made sense. And, you know, to be honest, maybe he buttered me up a little bit because he was like, I was kind of mad, actually, when I brought it up. I said, why did you vote me out instead of it? Like, why did you guys tip Christian off? And then the very next vote, you got rid of Christian. Like, great idea. That was literally my idea one vote earlier. And Nick said, because you were a threat guy. Like, because at that point in the game, I was threatened by you. Mm-hmm. And I was like, ooh, what? Oh, that kind of worked. Like, I don't care if you're sucking up to me. That kind of worked. Yeah.
He knows what to say at these final tribal councils. Yeah.
The biggest reason, and I hope Nick knows that I love him and I think he played an amazing game. I actually think that Mike lost the game. Mm-hmm. More than Nick, you know, totally outplaying Mike. I think Mike lost the game at Final Tribal, and it pains me to say. And like, I just want to give props to the three people. I mean, 3 out of 10 jury members is no joke who voted for Mike. And I don't want people to ridicule Christian or Allison or Kara for voting for Mike just because he's a millionaire or whatever. You know, he's a successful guy because Mike played a really good game. And I think possibly if anyone were Mike, If Mike were anybody other than Mike White, he may have won the game. He played an amazing game, and I think he really was struggling internally, and it showed during Final Tribal Council, and I do think that he may have lost the game there. I don't know. I can't speak for other people, and I can't speak for like how many votes he may have gotten, but I will say like my vote was certainly up in the air.
Can you be more specific in what he did?
Yeah.
In your or how did he lose your vote?
How he lost my vote was that he was demonstrating that he felt conflicted about winning. And I totally feel for him and I empathize for him. How must it feel to be like, you know, this well-off guy and you're sitting next to this like Kentucky lawyer who comes from a home of, you know, he's from whatever. It's like, I got why Mike was conflicted. The thing that in my eyes really hurt him was at one point, Mike literally said the words, "I feel weird about winning." And it was like jaws dropped, like my jaw dropped, I think. And I actually kind of raised my voice at one point and I said, "Mike, do you want to win?" Because I was like, there's no way you're telling me this. Because I already feel weird about voting for a millionaire to win, right? Which I was considering. So, like, you have to make me feel good about it. You have to make me feel like it's okay to vote for you. Don't make me feel like you don't even want it. And I think that he was truthful. I think really he felt like he played a good game, but he maybe wanted the title without the money, or he maybe, you know, he felt weird about I don't know what it was. I can't speak on his behalf, but it was really unfortunate because I think that people would have voted for him. And it's not unfortunate for Nick. I mean, it's good for Nick, but what was funny was we talked earlier about sort of judging the jury perception. And I think Nick was so worried about Kara when he should have been worried about Mike. And I know some of us were saying he should have taken Kara as the guaranteed final three spot, and he should have made Angelina and Mike go off on fire because Angelina was very, very good at fire. She could have beaten Mike. Mm-hmm. If Nick is sitting next to Kara and Angelina, Nick wins, in my opinion. I think Kara maybe gets to go. I think Nick still wins. Mike was the one where we were like, I remember actually at the final four tribal where Nick has to say,
who he picked. He says, I don't think I could win the game tonight, but I certainly could lose $1 million tonight if I make the wrong decision.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, I almost, one of my jury questions in the final three was almost, Nick, you said that you could lose $1 million tonight. I think you might have by sitting next to Mike. And I didn't end up saying it because Mike had been so weird at Final Tribal. But it was like, I mean, it was legit. So like, I mean, if I'm really happy for Nick. I voted for him. I love him. I'm so happy he won. In the way, I think it was like the best of both worlds, where I think people maybe can recognize Mike's game as a strong social game. But in the end, kind of like, you know, the underdog wins and the guy from Kentucky who's doing like a noble job wins. And he did play an amazing game. So in the end, like, I think Mike maybe got what he wanted, where he felt weird about winning. Well, then you don't have to win, but still played an amazing game. But I mean, I actually left Final Tribal thinking that Mike may have won.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it's funny to hear Nick say he was sure that he won when he left the game, because I didn't know if he had.
Yeah.
Like, part of the reason I cried when I cast my vote was because I loved them both. So as much as I say, like, I never strategized with Mike, I adored him and thought he was a smart, funny, kind human being. And I cried because I think part of me was like, I almost wanted to vote for Mike. And like, I felt like I couldn't because Mike said he felt weird about winning. And I don't want that to take away from my vote for Nick at all. And I hope Nick knows that, like, I adore him and I was so proud to vote for him. And that was part of the reason why I cried as well, was when I cried, I was so overwhelmed with just pride for Nick and like being the representative of the Davids. I thought he was a great representative. I had, you know, I was so proud of him actually for coming out of his shell and sharing his story about his family, which I never felt like he was taking advantage of. I just, as someone who values vulnerability, I admired that in him. So I was really, really proud of Nick. And then I think part of me was really sad and felt like guilty for not voting for Mike in a way.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, I wish I could have voted for both of them.
Gabby, let me give you some questions from the listeners of the podcast. Okay.
Woohoo. Okay.
Okay. Edward Morris wants to know, how did you perceive the whole Angelina and the ladder situation on the jury versus on the show? Were you able to get a clear picture of what went on from being on the jury?
No. Oh my gosh. It was so funny hearing her describe the story of finding the idol when you're on the jury. Like I said, when you're on the jury, you're like, I don't know what's real and what's theater. And I think there's a shot of me on the jury where I say, oh my God, she can't stop talking about it. Because it did seem like she just like kept kind of saying, and I found this little guy, and I had to climb a ladder. You made me work for it, Jeff. And we were all like, what? Like, what is happening? Like, what are you talking about? And like, I will say, I'll just use this opportunity to talk about like just the idol thing in general. Like, I was really close with Allison, and like, I don't think Angelina's fake idol ploy had the effect that she wanted it to on the jury. Like, for me, being really close with Allison, that was hard to watch. Mm-hmm. Like, I was hurt sympathetically for Allison. I know it was a really hard thing for her when she came back to Ponderosa. Like, she was laughing about it because she was like, oh, I knew for sure it was fake. Like, it was so, like, she called it when she walked up to Jeff with the thing. She was like, this is literally a shell on a piece of string, but like, whatever. But like, I don't think it had the effect that Angelina wanted it to. To me, it seemed a little spiteful, a little mean. And then like, to top that off with like, oh, and you made me work for this one. It was like, I am proud of her for finding an idol. Like, it's something I wish I could have done. Like, we can talk all day about how women find idols and how, like, you know, I couldn't find the stupid advantage and all of these gendered things. But Angelina finding the idol was not as impressive as it could have been because she was not a target. So it was kind of like, you found an idol, but no one was like keeping an eye on you. Like, it wasn't like your back was against the wall and you found an idol. It was just like, you just found it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, so,
but wasn't everybody looking for the same idol at the same time?
everyone was looking for the same idol. And it's like, I don't know, there's only five of you left. Like, you have a 1 in 5 chance of finding it. Like, there was so much theater at Tribal Council where it was like, she was like, and I ripped my leggings falling down from this rock wall. Mm-hmm. It was like, and Allison was like, yeah. And then I like walked up on her planting a fake idol and I like knew it was fake. Like, it was just very, so watching the episode, the funniest part for me was seeing her talk about, like that she wanted to draw votes on herself so she could like artificially save herself. Because to me, that was the funny thing, was it was like when she pulled out the idol, nobody was like, oh my gosh, like she just like Kelly Wentworth, like canceled 9 votes mm-hmm. against her. It was like, oh, like no one has targeted Angelina since the final 11. So like, okay, you found like a magic, you know, it's like you found an Easter egg.
Okay.
But like it doesn't like matter. Like it was like, yeah, you won the Easter egg hunt, but like you weren't in danger. So like, it's like, it, that's the thing where it's like survivor resumes, right? Do resumes really matter? Is it like, check, won an immunity, check, found an idol, if you didn't really need it? Like, does that really matter? To me, I don't know. To me, it wasn't like super impressive, but I still wanted to like give her a shout out for like, hey, congrats, you're a woman and you found an idol. Cause I like knew it was something like meta we had talked about.
Right.
Like that we knew like women found idols less often, but I was also like, there were like 3 women left at the final 5 and like everyone was looking for it. The thing is, note that the time when she found an idol was when it was sort of like allowable for everyone to be searching for an idol.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about idol dynamics. I think the reason why women have a harder time finding idols is not like, it's not because like we're worse at finding things or like whatever. It's because like social dynamics make it more awkward for us to leave camp. Like if you leave camp as a woman, it's very like people notice. Cause it's like, people are like, well, what's she doing? Like she's not bringing back firewood. Or even if, I mean, I would go all the time and look for firewood and look for an idol, but it would be like, it's just like a weird thing. It's just like a cultural thing where if a guy was missing, he would come back and he'd be like, oh, I don't know what the hell he was doing. Like, oh, it's Davey. He was like catching geckos. Like that's not like a legitimate like survival activity, but Davey would come back and be like, I caught 4 geckos. They're like in this sock that I'm hanging off of my chest. And everyone would be like, that's cool. And like, if you're a woman and you were gone for a minute, it'd be like, what's she doing? That's so fishy.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I think it's very notable that the time when Angelina found an idol was when it was like, there was an idol search party and everyone was allowed to look. And that was the only time I ever felt comfortable looking, was like when all the Davids woke up really early and looked. Because it was like, everyone knew we were just like looking for an idol openly.
So just to go back to what you're saying with Angelina at the final tribal council, where that the impressive thing about an idol, at least from the jury perspective, is not that you found an idol, but that you not only had it, but you also were able to, you know, leverage it in the situation when you needed it, and not to artificially create that situation where, say, you know, somebody like Ben is able to, not only did he find idols, but he was able to use them in situations when he needed them. And that's the impressive part of the idol, not necessarily that you found it.
Correct. Yeah, I totally believe that. It was like when she played it, it was like it lacked the Ben Bomb effect. It lacked the luster. It was like, well, no one voted for you. Like you're not a target. Like, I mean, at that point, I think everyone was seeing her as a very person that they wanted to sit next to in the final 3. So it was like, oh, okay. I think it's the same thing with like winning immunities. I think Nick won immunities when he kind of
needed them. Right.
It maybe appeared that he had to. I don't know if he had to. It's things like that. I mean, and then you have things like, I mean, Nick played an idol when he didn't have to. And it was like, none of us really cared, but it was kind of like, oh, okay. Yeah, whatever. It wasn't like, people weren't like, wow, he like made a fake idol and he made this and that. It was like, okay, he played it wrong, whatever. I think the other tricky thing with getting an idol and playing aggressively, and the reason I wanted to give Angelina props, is idol play and that kind of thing is seen as aggressive gameplay. However, I think that sometimes when you oversell something, that's when it starts to lose its power. And there was a comment that I remember Angelina made at the final 5 that like kind of shocked a lot of us, which was that she had said something to Kara. Jeff asked Kara a question like, Kara, is it surprising to you that your name didn't come up today? And Kara was like, well, I'd like to think that that's a testament to my social game, that I have good relationships. And Angelina said something where she was like, well, I think some of us play more aggressively than others. And like, for example, I was climbing up a tree and finding an idol, whereas Kara was making rice at the camp. Delicious rice, by the way. And like, the thing like went silent. Like the jury was like, oh my God, this is so awkward. Because it was like,
wait, did you add in the part about the delicious rice or?
No, okay. Angelina yes. said that. She's telling Kara, you know, some people like to stay back at camp and make rice. Delicious rice, by the way.
She added she closed with a compliment. That's textbook. Perfect. Yeah,
and she was very good at that. And this is, I think Angelina is a kind person and means well. But I think like this is part of the reason why people like say that sometimes she struggles with seeming a little bit politician-y is because it's like it can come off a little transparent, right? Where it's like, are you really complimenting Kara's delicious rice, or are you trying to like say like, you know, I'm an aggressive player and Kara's a passive player. Mm-hmm. So that was very awkward for us on the jury. We noted it. Like it was, we came back and we were all like, oh, that was super uncomfortable. Then we found out that Kara had gotten a little, I shouldn't speak on behalf of her, but like Kara had gotten a little upset back at camp. Cause she was like, that was totally like a backhanded compliment. And like, I think Kara then was dubbed, like had kind of like a nickname around camp, like a joking nickname where they called her like Susie Rice Maker or something. Like it was
that
like,
wasn't
totally,
her t-shirt, was it?
You know, I don't know what Kara's t-shirt was, but we'll have to ask Mike. But it was like, so little things like that where like, I think that's the danger.
Why was it Sarah Rice Maker?
It was Sally. Like it was this way, like
Sally Rice Maker.
Susie. I think it was Susie.
That's not even alliteration.
I don't know what it was. Like just, you know, it was because it was kind of painted as like this diminutive, like feminine thing. Mm-hmm. Like I struggle so much because one of the things I went out there and we can talk about it is I was like, I want to be a strong feminist and I want to be a mouthpiece for like all these things that I believe in. And one of them is like feminism. And I think it's such a tricky line in feminism where it's like, I do think women should be rewarded for bold, aggressive gameplay the same way that men are. Right. And that was sort of like what Angelina's angle was, where it's like, well, if I were a man, people would have listened to me. Or if like, you know, if I'm playing aggressively, I should be rewarded. At the same time, I think part of feminism is also recognizing the worth in feminine qualities, such as being nurturing, being emotional, being vulnerable, being social, like Kara, or like, you know, Allison is extremely empathetic. I am very emotional and vulnerable. Like, I think part of being a feminist is not only saying, you know, women can be tough just like men, but also saying, let's see the value in the more quote unquote feminine qualities. Mm-hmm. You even see people, I mean, I think even people like Mike White, who, you know, maybe played more of a quote unquote feminine. I don't even like that word, but like, you know, a social game, a feminine, a quieter game. And I think it's like, why was Nick, who is a more bold, aggressive, typically masculine player, rewarded instead of Mike, who played more of like a social, quote unquote, feminine
mm-hmm. role? Yeah.
Like, I do think that there's something to be said there. So sorry, that was sort of my diatribe about like, I totally respect Angelina as a feminist. It's so funny because she and I like really get along about that kind of stuff outside of the game. But I think inside of the game, we had a little bit of different perceptions about like, you know, what it meant to be a woman on Survivor and what it meant to be a strong woman versus. So like, I mean, I admire someone like Kara's game, who is an extremely social game. Even though maybe it's harder to portray on TV.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This is a question from Felipe, who wants to know, do you have an update on the dog from First One Out?
Foo the dog. Okay. So for everyone who's confused, in First One Out, Josh Wiggler comes to Fiji and interviews us all before we start the game. And during mine and Josh's interview, a stray dog interrupted the interview. And it was really fun because it was like he and I just bantered about the dog. And I was like, Josh, if I'm the first one out, we're gonna write like a children's book about this dog, Foo the dog. And so no update on the dog, but I hope he's doing well. It was a great centerpiece for, I think Josh like eventually uploaded a picture to his Instagram and I was like, oh good. It wasn't just all like a fever dream because it was like the weirdest thing ever. You're in this holding pattern. You can't talk to anybody for like days and days. And then I finally can talk to Josh Wiggler, who I like know from the podcast. And I'm like, hey Josh. And then there's like this dog there. Oh, it's just like the weirdest thing ever.
John Johnston wants to know, did you get to meet Angelina Jolie?
John Johnston, like what is like his first name John and his middle name John also, and then his last name is Johnston?
It's a long story.
Okay, Triple J wants to know, did I meet Angelina Jolie? I mean, this is part of the thing, okay? When you're on this cast of Davids and Goliaths and you're in the presence of Hollywood royalty such as Mike White, the writer of the Emoji movie.
No, we're not talking about that.
You learn to like be kind of cool about these things.
The writer of
Enlightened, the amazing television series. I started watching.
Come on, get with the program,
amazing.
Gabby.
Yeah, have you heard of some of his newer work? Come
on, like Mama's Dallas or Beatrice at Dinner.
Have you like recently been reading his Wikipedia page?
Well, look, I stand corrected.
His IMDb.
Okay? Yes.
So actually, I hung out at Mike's house a few days before the finale and he had a few people over. So yeah, we met a lot of cool people, including Angelina Jolie and people that are fans of Survivor. And it was very low key. And like, it was cool just that like people that I've seen in movies and TV shows and people that I admire watch Survivor. I'm like, really? You're watching Survivor with like your kids and you're watching me cry on TV. And like, I've seen you in so many movies. So, I think I know the subtext of why he's asking, but I can assure you that all the Davids and Goliaths, of our season get along very well. And we've all had different interactions with the various different fans of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And any, rumors that you've heard about any, delineations in our tribe are totally in our season is totally fabricated and people need to calm down.
Okay. All right. How about this is a question from Caleb Daughtry wants to know, was there anything that you heard on a podcast that you were thinking about in your head while you were on the island?
I think it was just cool to see in a lot of the podcasts, in the early podcasts, we had people saying like, oh, Gabby will need to cut Christian eventually. I remember Dom from Ghost Island was on the live know-it-alls and he was like, oh, Gabby's my winner pick. I think that she'll be smart enough that she knows that she has to cut Christian before the end of the
game.
And like, so hearing that kind of stuff, I was like, oh, thank God. Like, at least I think people will understand why I did what I had to do, even if like it didn't end up working out. To me, that was a relief to hear. To me, it would have been much more frustrating if I hadn't made the move and I came back and then people on podcasts were like, oh, Gabby would be an idiot if she went to the end with Christian. Like that would have been much more frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I did listen to podcasts. I read all this stuff online. I read all this stuff online. I was warned against, but like, whatever. I'm a super fan. Like I was so curious and I've always enjoyed reading it throughout the season when I'm not on it. So I figured I'd read it. Of course, there were some things that were harder to read than others. And I appreciated one thing I always respected about RHAP is I felt like you never gave like a credible voice to like some of the like colder takes. And actually, if you don't mind, like I would like to actually address some of the colder takes just because like,
this is a new segment. I like it.
Segment. Okay. Cold takes. I'm really glad that you played along because I was like, I don't know where this is going.
Yes. No, I love it.
Okay. Cold takes with Gabby Pascuzzi.
And old man winter.
Jack Frost. I never really got my feelings that hurt by any of the stuff I read online, because I know that you guys are responding to like an edited product, and you're responding to only 42 minutes of, you know, a 72-hour period every episode. So like, I never held it against people when they were like, oh, I think this was a dumb move, or like, this was like, that's totally part of the fun. Like, debate it. That I did the same thing, right? That's why I applied for Survivor. I applied for Survivor because I was a fan and I was like, these people are idiots. I could do way better than them. So I know that that's part of the fun. The only thing that ever hurt me, and I would just like to speak on it now so that we can just like nip this in the bud, kill it. It is the coldest of the cold takes. Is my fatal move in trying to take Christian out and how it got me eliminated. The most hurtful thing that I saw online and people commenting on my Instagram and stuff was people saying that I was jealous of Christian's girlfriend. And I almost like don't want to bring it up because it's so ridiculous that it, I don't want to give it any credibility, but I want to address it because I want people to know that it hurt my feelings. Mm-hmm. And the reason that it hurt my feelings is because I think that it's a statement that is rooted primarily in misogyny. And I'm sorry to probably everyone who like hates me talking about feminism has already like tuned out, but like to assume that I would make $1 million decision based on a man that I had met 32 days prior, mm-hmm. You know, I went out there to play a game, not to have anything romantic. And to assume that I am like, it's like saying that I'm a secondary character in someone else's narrative, right? Mm-hmm. Saying that Christian is the main character, he's the protagonist, and I'm like the jealous woman that is like
fatal attraction. Girlfriend.
Yeah, like it's insulting. I am my own
the homewrecker.
The homewrecker, like I make my own decisions. So it hurts my feelings on a personal level because of sort of like the assumptions attached to it that I find insulting. But on another level, it's just dumb. It's dumb. It doesn't hold up to logical scrutiny. Because are people insinuating that I did not know that Christian had a long-term girlfriend of a very long time, 13 years? Mm-hmm. Before that day of day 32, when I knew him since day one, that's the kind of thing. What you guys don't understand, the people who are watching and saying these things, is we're out there constantly. We have nothing to do. Mm-hmm. No Twitter. We have no internet. We have no video games. All we do is talk. We know everything. It's like, you know, people's middle names, you know, the names of their cats, you know, the names of their,
yeah.
Your mother's maiden names. I could probably break into a few bank accounts with the things that I know.
Passwords. Everyone's
information. And like, I knew from day one that Christian has this very serious girlfriend. You know, it's things that you talk about. You talk about Carl's wife. You talk about Nick's girlfriend. You talk about Christian's girlfriend. So like, it's so insulting that people would think like, all of a sudden, Gabby realized that Christian wasn't in love with her. He was in love with his serious girlfriend of 13 years. It's like, mm-hmm. Of course I did. And so it was like, that was really frustrating because in the days leading up to the loved ones, you know, he and I had conversations where I was like, oh, like, I hope I win and I would take you and I hope you bring Emily and I really want to meet her and like all these things. So like, it's just rude and it's insulting to me and it's insulting to Emily because she didn't ask for any of this. You know, she didn't sign up to go on Survivor. She just happens to be the loved one of somebody who is on the show. And like, she didn't ask for this narrative of like, oh my God, like, your boyfriend's closest ally got jealous of you. And like, that is like so insulting. So that's all I'm going to say about it. I did want to address it just so I could like freaking nip it in the bud and let people know that like, not only is it a cold take, but it's like a harmful and a little bit of a toxic take. So like, please stop saying that. I haven't seen it recently, but like, I hope that that's just like dead.
Okay. Any other cold takes that are out there?
You know,
get the snow plow.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, no other cold takes other than I think that was it. I really enjoyed reading all the online stuff and hearing this. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really been fun for me. It's been fun for the most part. The other cold take is just like, oh my God, can you guys stop complaining about me crying? Like, you crying is more annoying than me crying. Like, oh my God, stop already. Mm-hmm.
You guys know that I cried maybe like 15 seconds in an episode out of like 72-hour period. And it's like, the only reason they showed me crying was because I cried during very like key moments. Like, you never saw me crying because I was like, oh, I I'm hungry, or like I stubbed my toe. Like, it was like I was crying because I was like, oh my gosh, I might get sent home, or like whatever. Like, so, oh my God, please, like, enough with the, you know, actually it's funny and I own it, but it's like, I think people complain more about me crying than like the amount of time that I cried on the show.
Mm-hmm. All right. We got all the cold takes out of the way. people should cry just to get screen time.
I know, like, actually it was strategic. I should say that, right? I should just, oh, okay. I will address, I'm going like way back now, but I think one of the other things people were, the things that would be fun to debunk was way back in the play in the sand scene.
Yes.
people were like, was she playing him? Was this purposeful? Does she know what she's doing? My official statement, I would like to read a prepared statement.
Yes, please. Jeremy it up.
I'm just kidding. But, it was real. And so this is the thing, is I think that my emotions are real and strategic, where I knew that they're genuine, but I'm like, I know how to sort of like focus them. So I think I was really scared. I was really genuinely scared that I was going home. And so I asked Christian, I was like, do you want to play with me? But of course I knew in a way that Christian was a very protective and empathetic person. So I knew that he would want to
mm-hmm.
for me. So like, you know, playing up the sort of vulnerable side of me is strategic. And the one, like, of course I got to bring it back to like a larger societal issue. Cause otherwise this would not be a podcast with me. But, the comment that I have about that is I think that we in society have a tendency to either put women as like the vulnerable virgin, like, or
the damsel
or the manipulative, like man eater.
Yeah. The harlot.
Those were the two takes that I saw, where people were like, she really is that pathetic and she's like begging him for help. Or it was like, she's an evil genius and she's manipulating him and the tears are fake. And I'm like, what does this say about society that it has to be either like the Madonna or the whore, right? Or it's like she's manipulating him. Yeah, the harlot or the damsel. Why does it have to be those two? And like, what does it say about society that those were the two that it came from? Why can't it be somewhere in between where it's like, I'm just a person and I was a person like being vulnerable, but also like also knowing that, you know, like my like also I think that I can be a charming person that makes people want to work with me. Like, why can't it be both without being like
mm-hmm.
extremes?
Yeah,
that's all.
Well, you know what, Gabby, I feel good about what we get to do here in these podcasts, because, you know, that this is a show on television, but, you know, most of television is fictional characters, and the characters that are on those shows, you know, can't talk about their character and how they're shown on the show. But the nice thing about what we get to do on shows like this is where you're a real person who was a TV character. And then you get to talk about what you were going through, and then also the reaction to being on the show, where, you know, if you watch a show on Netflix, those characters mm-hmm. don't get to talk about that. So I do yeah. think that we have the opportunity to be able to talk about important stuff.
I agree wholeheartedly, and that's why I've been a fan for several years, and that's why I'm really grateful that I've gotten a chance to come on and talk to you. And I know that only a tiny percentage of Survivor fans, it's only the super duper fans that are listening to this, and I'm not trying to change the minds of, you know, the Facebook moms that are like commenting on Facebook like, I hate Gabby, she cries too much. Those aren't the people that I care about. That I really do feel like I am so lucky to be part of this community now, and part of the cool thing for me is I am so interested in humans and human psychology and social issues. And I feel like Survivor put a lot of them under a microscope for me and really, you know, inflated issues that I was already passionate about and that I already knew things about. It brought it to the forefront. And so if I get to even talk to a tiny, tiny, teeny fraction of however many people listen to this, that is so huge for me. And I had so much fun talking about it. So whatever, I know maybe I like not everyone's going to agree with me, and that's totally fair. And that's part of the fun of this as well. And that's part of the fun of being a fan. Mm-hmm. I do hope that, like, in listening to this kind of thing, people realize that everybody, you know, has their own motivations and perspectives for doing things. And, like, it's totally fine to go along with the edit of a show and, like, you know, be sold the edit that the show is selling you. Like, the producers work hard to produce a TV show that makes sense, even if that means whittling people down to a little bit more of a simplified product. But I think that the smartest Survivor fans know that there's something underlying all of that and know that they're not seeing the whole picture. So I think when people, you know, if you're ever tempted to make a snap judgment about somebody, and I'm talking about somebody, you know, not about like Game Move. That's always fun to talk about. Just like stop for a second and think about, like, you know, the fact that you're seeing this like hyper edited product. I always knew that as a fan, and like it, you know, it's confirmed having played it. And I know that like most of the super fan community is smart enough to read through that, but it is definitely fun to be able to talk about some of these things that like I've thought about for years and years. Oh my gosh, I've had so many thoughts on like the gender dynamics and all of these things, and it's like I actually get a chance to talk about it. And you know, that's why I chose to talk about it at Final Tribal, and that's why I chose to talk about it now. And it's like, I know it might not be everybody's cup of tea, but you know what, too bad. You get on Survivor and you talk about what you want to talk about.
Okay. Gabby, any interest in playing Survivor again?
I would, you know, I think it would be hard to measure up to this experience. Cause it was so pure, and I'm so grateful that we were on like a season that people really enjoyed. But of course there are things, there are regrets that I have, and there's so much that I wish that I could have done. But overall, I'm extremely happy with my experience. Like if it ends here, I'm so happy with it. I went out swinging. I did what I wanted to do. I made amazing connections. I had the time of my life. So I'm happy with it as it lays, but you know, never say never.
Okay. And Gabby, I see you tweet a lot about the Bird Box. Have you watched it, or you just tweet about it?
I watched it, you know, and I know
I didn't watch it yet.
Things. Oh my gosh! Well, first, what I did, which I also tweeted about, was that I read the Wikipedia summary because I hate scary movies. I hate them. So, like, I have to know what's going to happen in the movie before I watch it because I don't want to be surprised by anything.
Yeah.
So, but I ended up getting pressured into watching it by one of my friends. And so I watched it, but it is ripe for memes. Let me tell you. And like, I think my love language is memes. So like now it's just like, oh good. I have like ammo for some tweets now, like using the Bird Box analogies. Bird Box memes, but yeah.
Yeah. Too bad those Bird Box people didn't have you to talk them through wherever they seem to be going with a blindfold on.
Oh, I know. Yeah, that's my skill, right? That's the all the technical writers were like, yeah, there is value in clear instructions. Like our job isn't totally useless. So that, yeah, exactly. I can lead anyone wherever they need with a blindfold. If Bird Box, if they needed me to lead them through an intricate table maze, they needed like two brochachos to lead them through.
Yes.
I will say like, that was an awesome challenge. I am so lucky that I was being carried by like the two strongest guys. I remember one time they were like behind the fence, and I was like, oh my God, shoot. Like I messed up. I'm going to have to like make them go back. Dan's like, never mind. I walked over it. I stepped right over it.
Oh, Gabby, great job here. So nice to get to catch up with you. Do you have a hashtag for the listeners?
Oh my gosh. Do we? I don't know. I need your help.
Okay. Well,
hashtag cold takes.
Cold takes. Okay. That might imply that that your takes are cold.
Oh yeah, I hope not. Hashtag no more cold takes.
No more cold takes. That's,
yeah,
that's
no more good. Cold takes.
All right, no more cold takes, people. Okay. All right. Gabby, if people want to find you on all of the social media, I know you tweet a lot, but you also Instagram.
Oh my gosh, you're preference? Gross to me because I know how hard you get on people.
I'm sorry. It's been like a legitimate source of anxiety for me.
It's fine. You're very judgy.
Yes, and I know. That's my thing. But are you officially your name now?
Okay, on Twitter, I got my name. On Twitter, my name is Gabby Pascuzzi. My last name is spelled P-A-S-C-U-Z-Z-I, like pizza. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is, I actually like managed to lock myself out of having that name on Instagram because my name on Instagram is Gab Scoozy, which is the same, but like minus all the middle.
Just
okay. Yeah, so just like the just same, but minus.
Take off the, you've sort of like portmanteaued your own name.
You're exactly.
You're like, it's like you're like dating yourself.
Yeah. It's like, it's my own couple name because that's my truest and longest relationship is with myself. it's the most reliable, but yeah, it's like Pascoozy, but it's like Gab Scoozy. Mm-hmm. Anyway, maybe it's stupid, but that was my name on both. But then what I did was so the name didn't used to be available on Twitter. This is so boring, but the name didn't used
Look,
to be available on
Gabby,
Twitter.
We're 3 hours into a podcast. It's all if somebody's come this far.
Oh my gosh.
We're not losing anybody else at this point.
This is bring Father Winter back. I need this. But anyway, I actually like created another account with my full name, Gabby Pascoozy, on Instagram because I was like, well, just in case I decide to use this one day. And somehow like I locked myself out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, SOS, I need help getting back into my full name, Gabby Pascoozy, on both because I really want them to match. That's the thing is I wanted them both to match. So they used to both match and now they're mismatched. Anyway, it's Gabby Pascoozy on Twitter, Gab Scoozy on Instagram. On Twitter, you can expect #NoColdTakes. And no more cold takes. Mm-hmm. And Instagram, you can expect either like throwback pictures of me at Ponderosa, or like sometimes I post pictures of nature that are like years old, and I like to pretend like I'm still nature-y, even though I moved out of Colorado. And like just, you know, great content all around. Usually just me being like, I'm craving Chick-fil-A today. So, you know, follow me if you want to. And don't if you don't want to because I have a terrible screen name.
That's not what the metric that people use to follow. Just to find you it can be difficult.
I know, but what if they can't find me and then they're gonna I mean I've heard you go in on people's handles before, Rob, so I was very nervous about this portion. Actually, I was like, he's going to judge me that they're
look,
he's going to make fun of me that I don't have a boyfriend, and he's going to say that I'm like dating myself.
I have never made fun of anybody for not having a significant other.
I have a request as a fan. Where did the love know-it-alls go?
You wanted to come back?
Yes, and I wanted to be a guest on it.
Okay, if you want to be a guest on it, that might be... I know Stephen Fishback is a huge fan of yours. That might be enough to get him to come back.
I was obsessed with it. It was so good. And that's like one of my... I like love talking about relationships. I'm like the classic, like, I'm single, but I will give out relationship advice to whoever. I think I give good advice despite being single. I think I'm single because I have very... I have high standards because... So if you come to me with a relationship question and you're like, my boyfriend did this like crappy thing to me, I'll be like, dump him, sis. Dump him.
Mm-hmm.
And clap emoji in between each word.
Yeah. But that's not the kind of stuff that Steven likes to talk about. He like wants to get into like what are like the tips and tricks that you like? He likes to talk about like the.
I like that too. You know, I could maybe use a couple of tips and tricks. No, but I like that kind of stuff. Yeah. Bring it back. I'm going to start a petition. So like at me, at Gabby Pascoozy.
to bring the love know-it-alls back with Gabby.
#Hashtag bring the love know-it-alls back. It's so good. It's so good. Okay. I really like it.
All right. Gabby. Okay. All right. This was so nice to catch up with you. All the best to you. And hopefully no more cold takes from anybody on social media.
Thanks. I hope so, too. And it was so fun talking to you. I hope we'll talk again soon. It was awesome. Thanks for letting me. That was very cathartic. Thanks for letting me.
Anytime. All right. Take care, Gabby.
Okay, bye.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Gabby Pascoozy here on the podcast. With Gabby, did a really great job. Very fun to catch up with Gabby. Going to be working on tracking down an interview with Allison sometime soon. That'll probably be the next one of these postseason interviews that we end up doing here on the podcast. Thanks so much for sticking around all the way through. Really appreciate that you guys seem to enjoy these and listen. And I love getting your feedback on these. continues. Of course, thanks so much to the patrons of Rob as a Podcast. It's been 5 years running that we started the Rob as a Podcast Patreon program. For more about the benefits of joining the community of people that love talking about Survivor and Rob as a Podcast, check out robhasawebsite.com/patron for more information. That's robhasawebsite.com/patron. We could not be doing all this without the support of our patrons. All right, everybody. Thank you so much. Take care. Thanks to Gabby again. Take care. Have a good one. Bye. Special thanks to our friends over at True Car for sponsoring this episode of Rob Has a Podcast. Every car comes with its share of stories. That ding or bing in your bumper when you nervously picked up your first date, that luxury package you got after the big promotion, or the mileage you save by riding your bike all summer long. You can't put a price tag on your stories, but now with True Car, you can at least find out what your car is worth when it's time to sell or trade it in. Just go to True Car, simply enter your license plate number and watch your car's details pop up. Then answer a few questions. Navigation and moonroof. Watch as they bump up your value. High mileage. You knew it was going to cost you, but now you know how much it's going to ding your wallet, so you can plan ahead. And once you're finished, you can get a true cash offer sent in minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash out or to trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out True Car today. True cash offer not available in all areas.